everybody, and welcome to the Lucaside Podcast. Episode 20. This is crazy. I wasn't sure if I was going to get here. It seemed like an impossible number when I started out at 1, and now we're all the way at 20, and I'm actually almost at 100 uploads even, which just boggles my mind. Thank you so much, everybody, just for tuning in every single week and being there along my journey. I am curious to go back and listen to a couple of my old episodes and see how I've changed and how I've gotten comfortable on the mic and just doing more podcasting. So I'm really excited to be here. And since it's episode 20, I had to make it a special episode. And I had a couple episodes lined up, but my professor, so my guest today, Professor Jason, he is my jiu-jitsu professor. I met him at Addos Westchester, which is our gym, and he went on two big trips this year. Or he went on several big trips, more than that. He went on two recently, though, to other countries, and he traveled, and he had an amazing experience. So he said, I have to come on the podcast again. When am I coming back on? And I told him, I said, you're welcome anytime. So let's get this done. Let's record. And I'm really at a loss for words for how powerful this podcast was for me. There was no good way to cut this podcast. It's a whole story in itself. We start off a little bit light, talking and poking fun at each other and just having a little fun talking about video games. He makes sure that he gets me down to come in 2 times a week so that I can get my blue belt, which to get from him would mean everything in the world to me. And then he starts talking about his travels and why he started traveling again. He didn't travel for a very long time, actually. And he describes why that happened and why he took a break and why he went on so many trips this year. And it was really powerful. A lot of his influence from his dad passing away, which he then describes to me in the podcast. And that is just such a powerful experience for me. And I really don't know what else to say about it. It left me at a loss for words. And again, it was just incredible to have. It was really special to have him on and talk about that with me and the podcast itself. So again, sorry, I'm rambling a little bit. I really didn't know how to introduce this podcast. It meant a lot to have him on again for me. And there was no good place to cut it because it is a story in itself. The year that it has been for him and where he is now and how he got there. So that's why I decided not to cut this, and it's a special episode. Thank you, all of you who are listening. If you enjoy this episode, please share it, because my professor is just such an influential person. And I just want to say to Jason, because I know he's going to listen to this, I love you. I'm glad you're my professor, and thank you for coming on. And without further ado, I know I've gone on for a while, but here is my professor and episode 20. Thank you, guys. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Lucaside Podcast. But I mean, we got a repeat offender here. I don't know how else to put it. I mean, I'm excited for this podcast. I'm excited again.
Well, good thing, because I'm here. Yeah. And you can't hide from me this time.
Oh, no, I'm not going to hide at all this time. And this is going to be, this is my first guest where I had Joe on again. I recorded some with him. It's not out yet, but it was more just like a casual type thing. But this is going to be, that was like short. I think it was only like 40 minutes or so. But this,
I can't even start a conversation with 40 minutes. Having a 40-minute podcast is like trying to go through your inventory on Skyrim. It's like, it's going to take me 40 minutes. I haven't even started yet.
I have to actually just prep everything with my Skyrim inventory just to make sure that everything is working.
Yeah, but good luck even having that, like having a complete template to follow. Mm-hmm. If you're like, well, I'm just going to play Skyrim for 20 minutes. No, you're not. You're going to stare at your inventory for 20 minutes, even if you have it ready. And then as soon as you're like, well, it's time to adventure, it's like, oh, wait a minute. No, I'm an adult. now I got to do life stuff.
That's so funny because you only have like an hour to do. But when you sit down and play like these new games, we were actually just talking about video games before we even started recording. When you sit down and play these new games, it's like, it's a commitment.
Yes.
Yeah.
I keep the UFC game. I've gotten every edition just because it's one of the only games that I can actually sit down and play for 20 minutes and feel like I've accomplished something. Everything else, like, I wake up before the rest of my family. I probably get up at like 5:30 sometimes. And
good for you.
Look, I go to bed at 8, so it's not as if I'm just like this awesome human who just can't sleep.
Well, I mean,
just,
when you're wrestling dudes all day,
it's true.
Them up.
It's true. I come home and it's like 8 o'clock. We put our kid to bed, and I'm just like, well, let's just go to bed anyway. So I get up. I get up at like 5. I drink some coffee, lukewarm, because I don't trust anyone that drinks hot coffee.
Anyway, as I'm drinking hot coffee right now.
Look, I'm going to get into that in a second because I think it's maybe I'm the odd man out, but
I'll let you get into it. Let's get on this this video game stuff you're talking about.
So like, I get up and I'm just like, okay, I want to play. My daughter gets up anywhere from like 6 to 7:30, mm-hmm. 8 o'clock. So you never really know, mm-hmm. and I always get like anxious. I'm like, I would like to start this game, but as soon as I start this, she's going to get up.
Yeah.
My daughter's pretty cool. It's not as if like at 3 she needs everything to stop for. But like, if I'm going to play a video game, I want to be committed to it consciously.
Yeah.
You know. And this goes with movies or anything. And then mm-hmm. so I just sit there and I'm like, "Well, she's going to get up soon. I'm not going to do it." And on the days that I make that decision, she doesn't get up till 8. Right? So I just sit there for like 2 hours like, I could have watched a Star Wars movie or something. And then the days that I'm like, no, screw it. I'm gonna drag all my music equipment out. I'm gonna start recording.
Yeah.
Drag it all out, set it all up, and it's like 5:30. She's like, hey dad. I'm like, oh.
It's the parenting gods are getting after you. They know you want a life and they're like, not today.
You know, and I think I project it more myself just because like I grew up when I either like read or watched movies or played video games, it was always mm-hmm. like isolated.
Yeah.
You know, and as an adult, you really don't have that. So I just wait. Like, I was just telling you, like, I didn't buy this Assassin's Creed because I'm putting all my eggs into the Red Dead basket.
That is not a bad basket.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, I got so much stuff that I want to do before the end of October.
Yeah.
And I have to get it done. So I'm rebranding this school and I'm going to relaunch it.
Yeah.
We're still going to be Autos, but like mm-hmm. something more tangible to represent myself. And I'm like, I got literally till the 26th to make this happen because priorities are going to dictate mm-hmm. that. I'm going to get up at 4 now just to make sure I have enough time to go through my inventory.
I do want
to
signpost that because I want to ask you about it, but keep going with
Sure. That's it. I just wanted to complain about, you know, mm-hmm. not having time to play video games. But so you're drinking warm coffee and I have no clue. So we were just in Europe and everywhere we went, of course they're gonna give you hot. I guess everywhere in the world you get hot coffee.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I can't drink this. Who can possibly drink scalding hot coffee? I don't trust you. It's insane. I make our coffee the night before. I get up the next morning, I pour it in a cup and I drink it in one gulp because I don't have time or the interest to sip coffee.
That's because you're a parent.
Yeah. Well, it's not just that. I'm also like, I don't like coffee. I like caffeine.
Yeah.
So like hot coffee, I'm like, this is just stopping me from getting the caffeine. It's slowing me down. And I don't want to, if I want to gradually, like, I'll just drink water and let the sun do it. No, like I need artificial energy. Give me the caffeine. Mm-hmm. I started taking caffeine pills. It's way better. Right?
You can measure it out too, which is the nice thing about it. Or you just take as many as you can.
So like speaking of traveling, I'm addicted to caffeine. Now, I didn't drink coffee until I was in my 30s, if you can believe that.
I can believe it, yeah.
So
sure.
I never did. And
it's a hard thing to get into.
Well, I mean, so I can tell you the story. It's not that exciting, but we had gone to a restaurant for breakfast. It was booked up. We had to wait.
Yeah.
Right next door was a coffee shop. Ashley's like, let's just get a coffee. I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. We ended up getting a cup of coffee. And I said to the guy, I was like, I don't drink coffee, so why don't you just make me something for a first-time coffee drinker? And I don't know what he was thinking, because in retrospect, he was really just being an asshole about it.
Yeah.
But he gives me a cup of coffee with a shot of espresso in it. He's like, well, this is what I drink in the morning.
That's so funny that he just defaulted to like, oh, you know, this is what I do.
Right. Not
this guy is going to like this.
Not just a cup of coffee and not just an espresso, but both from someone who never had caffeine. I don't drink soda. So like caffeine and me were very foreign. And I never. Yeah. I'm pretty fortunate. I never did drink soda. But anyway.
My Coke days are over.
Oh, dude. It's
my Coca-Cola days. Just to clarify. Like,
I haven't been to sleep in 6 days. But so
I'm
sit
really
down.
I'm really itchy and jittery right now. Jesus. I'm really excited to do this podcast.
But so I drink the coffee. And once again, I drink it quickly because I can't stand
the taste of it. So do you wait for it to like cool down a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I try to let it cool down and then drink it all at once.
See, you can't trust a man who drinks hot coffee. I don't know how I can trust someone who sits there and waits for their coffee to cool down.
I'm just like a vulture, just perched, just waiting for it to get to like 98 degrees.
You're just waiting until the flies just get away far enough.
Yeah. If I can put my finger in my coffee for more than 2 seconds, then it's okay. So anyway, so I drink this coffee, right? As soon as I drink it, we get called to go to our seat. We sit down, and all of a sudden, I'm just like, it's a pretty cold morning. We're sitting outside, yeah. And I'm just like, I'm like hot. I feel great. My heart's like pounding though. I don't know why I feel this way, but I feel like I could just do anything. And I'm like, coffee.
I know.
And I promise you, I think I've been making up for my lack of coffee time in my 20s since I've been in my 30s. Cause you say you measure it out. I think if I did, it'd just be obnoxiously high.
Way
like
too much.
500, 600, 700 milligrams of caffeine.
Oh my God. You might just be one of those people though that like doesn't really feel it unless you have a lot. Cause I'm like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I drink
now anyway, because I'm completely conditioned to it.
So I might have a problem because I make this in the morning and we have like, what is it? The French presses. Have you seen those?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we have two tiny ones and then a large one that my dad makes in the morning. When he makes the large one, I drink like sometimes two or three of these cups. I don't really feel the caffeine. I just like the coffee.
Ugh, that's the worst. That's the worst. It's like, why don't I just drink piss? Because it's not, it's going to taste awful and it's going to accomplish nothing. That's why I switched to caffeine pills. So I went to Europe. You never know if you're going to get coffee. It ends up that it's actually super easy to get coffee in Europe, but you never know. So I bring the caffeine pills with me and they're so efficient, and I hate to say it, I almost sound like someone's like, just give it to me in pill form, but man, it makes my life so much easier, because I can wake up, take it, in about 20-30 minutes the caffeine buzz hits, and then I don't have to forage for coffee. You're on vacation, but I don't vacation, I travel, so I get up and I'm like, well, I don't want to spend 2 hours sitting in a coffee shop drinking coffee. No, I want to go. I didn't fly to Europe to sit, smoke cigarettes and stare at strangers on the street.
Yeah, I totally get that. Sorry, but that was so JV of me. My phone just went off. Let me turn that down. And that's muted now. So that won't happen again. I can't believe I'd let that happen.
So you haven't switched to cold brew yet, huh?
No, I haven't. No, I've never have.
I'm surprised.
Really?
I really am. I figured you'd be the guy on the forefront of the coffee world. Just doing crazy Greenland drip coffee.
I really like my hot coffee in the morning, actually.
Can you drink cold brew hot?
I have no idea. Man. I honestly have no idea.
These
I just
questions. You got to get to the answer, man. This is your podcast.
I know. I should do an episode on it. Just cold brew coffee, break it down. I'll be like Brendan Schaub. I'll make my own coffee then.
He's actually pretty funny, and I hate to admit it.
I love him.
A fighter, I could not stand him.
Really?
I just, whatever. When you watch fighting, it's so easy to attach yourself to certain people.
Oh, yeah,
and
I totally get that.
And look, if I ever had met him in person, it'd be totally different. But when you're just watching, it's fun to hate somebody. And when he knocked out Mirko Krokop, I was pretty gutted, because who doesn't love Krokop?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, with his podcast and stuff, he's actually a pretty funny, intelligent guy.
Yeah.
And I hate to admit that. So
I was listening before I came in here, actually.
Ugh, I don't go that far. I saw him on Ridiculousness not too long ago.
What's that? Am I missing out? I feel like I'm missing out on something.
Never heard of Ridiculousness?
No, I haven't.
Jesus.
I've never even heard of it.
It's okay. Well, fair enough. Show? I mean, you sleep on the floor, so I wouldn't expect you to watch an MTV show.
That is just going
to
be my go-to explanation for anything. when someone asks me, wait, you've never heard of let's use The Bachelor, for example. You've never heard of The Bachelor? I sleep on the floor.
Sleep on the floor. In a house. Not just in a dirt floor. I have access to these things, but I choose not to.
I actually have a bed that I sleep next to, but I sleep on the floor.
Oh my goodness, man. I want to talk about commitment for a second. You want to do
let's
that?
Go. Yeah, okay. For sure. Of course.
So we had this conversation last night, but let's get this on the air so it's out there.
Of course.
In the lexicon.
Yeah.
Now you're going to have to commit to it, because all your fans.
I actually did it last night. I talked about it.
Yeah?
Did you? I talked about it on My Refresher Friday.
Okay. Well, so I want you to be a blue belt. Now
that
you've been here.
That means a lot to me.
Well, I mean, it's more for me.
It's morphing.
Let's be honest.
The way you said that, I don't have video. Eventually, I'll have video capabilities, and you're going to be one of the first people in the studio for sure when that happens. We'll do a companion or something. But the way you said that, you were so... No, it's for me.
Like, this is my job. This means a lot to me. Mm-hmm. Like, you may get a blue belt, but I'll be able to post it on my Instagram. I want that. It's important. I need to feed the machine.
Yeah.
But okay, so you've been with me not quite 2 years, but like 2 years is about the...
It's coming up in January. 6 months or so. Or February. February, yes.
Yeah, I mean, let's just say January, because that's January. What I said.
That's fine. Sure. I'm not going to argue with you, because
anyway,
we've been over this.
you are very close, and you've been very busy. You're one of the more busy people that I know, especially at your age. And I'm very proud of you for all of that. But it does. Like, that's an awesome thing. But some things tend to get pushed to the back burner, mm-hmm. and your jiu-jitsu training has been one of those things. And look, no fault at all. Definitely not here to throw shade.
Yeah.
If I didn't do this professionally, my time for jiu-jitsu would oscillate, just like everybody's. Yeah. Anyway, you're close.
Thank you.
Now, I think, and I said this to you last night, if I put a blue belt on you and put you in another school, I don't think anybody would question it. Right.
That means a lot.
Really does. But what that is just your natural talent. You're an athlete. You know, you're a semi-pro tennis player. If you're not, well, just riff with it because it sounds cool. It's better than like,
I'm a
student who plays tennis. No, you're almost pro. You're knocking on the door. So like the results that you have on the mat here are sort of disingenuous to what every blue belt can be.
Yeah.
Because you came preloaded with a lot of athleticism.
Yeah.
So I want you to be a blue belt by the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you come two times a week,
yeah.
you can make that part of your schedule. Anything after that, I'm not saying two and that's it. Like, if you come on a third day, I'm going to lock you out. But
that was actually your max for the week?
You can't progress too fast here.
Yeah.
You got to let everyone else catch up.
Let's pump the brakes here.
But if we can do that, you'll be a blue belt by the end of the year.
Yeah.
And... Mm-hmm. The biggest thing is, it's not so much like you specifically need to have this goal, but if we're going to talk about anything besides coffee and video games and be serious, like, I really think that those short-term goals are really important. Because
yeah, for sure.
Even if you didn't make that a priority, eventually it would happen,
mm-hmm.
right? But if you do, and you just say, hey, look, in 3 months out, I have this goal that I can attain.
Yeah.
All I need to do is just be consistent.
Yeah.
I don't have to be above the mark. I don't have to be below the mark. I just need to be right there. And like, you don't need, I mean, 2 days a week's not that big of a deal. We're talking like a 4-hour commitment, you know, mm-hmm. like an hour traveling, hour jiu-jitsu. So now we're locked in.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, officially on the airwaves. Mm-hmm. This isn't airwaves. I don't even know what this is.
This is the, I was going to think of something clever, but I'm not that clever.
It's because this shit is too smart for us, man. Tell me how Wi-Fi works and I'll probably shut down.
Oh my God. No, I had my friend Andrew on. He actually probably could explain how Wi-Fi works, but.
Oh, it's probably super boring and techie, but.
Did you listen to, I actually just watched with Andre. I watched The Strange Times of the Rogan. And he talks about, I don't want to give away his stuff.
I watched it.
Yeah. Did you, the end where he's like, talking about women inventing things?
Oh yeah,
and he goes,
man.
They were just looking through her notes, and they were like, "Oh, cool Wi-Fi," you know. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. Who was that? Hedy Lamarr.
Yeah, something like that. She was really smart, but mm-hmm. Apparently, I have no idea who she is. I haven't looked anything up about it. I was actually just watching Rogan, just laughing.
I actually
about it,
know but... more about Hedy Lamarr, mm-hmm. the guy from Blazing Saddles, who they like ripped the name off of Hedy Lamarr, than I actually do the person who was and is. From what I remember, she was like a model in the 50s was also like a super genius on the side.
Well, hey, Wi-Fi.
That was actually a pretty good stand-up bit.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of Joe Rogan's stand-up. I know, like, mm-hmm. that might be sacrilegious. I don't dislike it, but he's really, like, intense. It seems like he's kind of, like, mellowed out just a little bit, had a pretty clear, decisive message.
Well, I mean, stand-up is, like, one of those things where it's like music, almost, where you listen to some comedians and you're just, that's really not for me. Their type of style is not for me. I don't like their flow. I don't really like their jokes. So I totally get that, where I like 70% of his hour usually. I thought it was amazing. And then there's going to be always those moments where you're kind of like, I don't know if I really vibe with this bit here.
Right.
I mean, I really enjoyed it overall. You know, I thought it was better than his last one. I thought he came out on fire.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much out there to pick from. Mm-hmm. Like, the world we live in is a stand-up routine.
Yeah.
Like when I was traveling and I come back home, and like I try not to go on Facebook too much, especially when I'm traveling. A, I just can't because it doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, blessing and a curse. Like, you have like a downtime and you just go back to like the same old routine. You open up your phone, and you're like, oh, this is worthless because I literally like Poland, especially, like my phone was basically shut down in Poland.
Yeah.
And then like we come back to like the US and I'm like on my phone and it's just like, literally just an endless stream of just like nonsense. Mm-hmm. And like, to be honest, like where we were and what we had done, we had gone to like Auschwitz, the concentration yeah. camp, and to like the Jewish ghetto in Krakow, to Berlin. And even though like there was no like camps or anything there, like it was basically destroyed, right?
Yeah. You've actually, real quick, you've been on two trips since we last talked, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You went to Krakow in Poland.
Yep.
And then you also went to
Croatia,
that's right.
Yeah, to Croatia, yeah. Bosnia, Montenegro.
Yeah.
I'll get into that stuff in a little bit if you
want.
Yeah,
for sure. I just wanted to clarify that you've been even more well traveled.
Yeah, I've been traveling. A lot's happened since I've been on the podcast, which is exciting.
Yeah.
Especially like I haven't been doing a lot of traveling the last few years. But anyway, so my point was when I came back and I open up my phone and I start scrolling and then you texted me.
I got to be on the podcast again.
Yeah.
the thing you were thinking about the whole time you were traveling.
This is going to be so good for the podcast. Yeah. Lucas is going to benefit so much from my travels. I was thinking about other people. Like, that's why I travel. It's not for me. It's because I know that your audience. Your shit.
All the heavy shit that was going on when you're just, especially when you went to Krakow and you went to Auschwitz.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's what you were thinking about.
Yeah. Lucas is going to love this stuff.
No, I mean, that must have been heavy.
Well, so, okay, I'll go back to what I was saying. Yeah. I'll finish that thought and then we can circle back.
Yeah, sorry to cut
you off. No. It's all relative. Like, when we came back and I'm on my phone and I've just been in two places. If you consider like the war that happened in Croatia, then like, you know, World War II and stuff, like, these places have been completely destroyed and rebuilt within a lifetime. And like I come back and I'm on Facebook and I just see this stuff about like Colin Kaepernick's knee and this, that, and the other. And it was such a, like, I hate to say, like, a welcome sight, because you're like, man, we really don't have that many problems.
Yeah.
And you really don't. Like,
it really puts things in perspective.
If that's what you want to argue about, like, it's okay. And like even the people that I disagree with, and I'm like, man, it's so cool that like this is our biggest issue.
Yeah.
Nobody's trying to round us up and throw us into ghettos. Like, no one's trying to take from you stuff besides, like, you know, I don't know, like nothing. Like, it just never happens.
Yeah.
Like, it's so good here that we literally forget and complain about like the most insane, asinine things. And I don't want to throw shade on anybody because, like, it's okay. Like, that's the culture you're brought up in. And like, it's hard to see past those bounds. But when you do travel, and I mean travel, not like vacation. You want to go to Punta Cana, do it, because it's probably a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But you're
a lot different than going like where you went
and
really seeing, like, what you did was you went, this is a really good distinction that you made, traveling and vacation. Vacation is like, so I went to Aspen. That was vacation. Like, we went, we did some hiking, we did everything like that. But then you went and you saw history and stuff like that. That's traveling for sure.
No, we also had a lot of fun. We rented dune buggies and jet skis. So, like, that's definitely touristy things. Mm-hmm. But it's action-packed. Like, I can't relax, much to the dismay of a lot of people I probably travel with. I'm just like, what are we going to do next? And they're like, how about we chill the fuck out? And I'm like, can we do that while...
That is the worst.
Doing something else?
Not you. I'm exactly like that. Sitting there and it's like... I think we're just going to chill today. What are you talking about? We're going to chill today.
Yeah.
We're here for a week.
Yeah.
We can chill when we get home.
And I'm almost envious that people can chill, but like I have none. I like literally like if we do have downtime, I'm opening up like Google Maps and I'm just like looking at like what else can I get myself into?
Can we chill over there, guys? Like, can we walk over there and chill?
So we chilled here for 5 minutes. How about we chill over there for another 4 minutes?
Yeah, there
and
we
then
go.
At that point, maybe we'll get some coffee because I noticed that everyone's energy levels are starting to dip. So
I'm just gonna take my pills now and I'll meet you guys over there in 10.
So true, man.
Just the whole day you're like, okay, here we go.
this one day, so we were in Croatia, and Croatia, this was like a last minute trip. The last time we were talking about the podcast, we're talking about my student Tom, who got me to fly again and took me to Bali. He brought up the fact that he found really cheap tickets to Croatia. We had like 60 days to go. So we bought the tickets. We went. Croatia is awesome. First off, if anyone out there is listening, go to Croatia. I promise you. Holy moly. We are in the Dalmatian coast, and it's one of the best places I've ever been in Europe, and if not the world. Like, surprisingly. Like,
yeah.
I was like, well, let's go. It'll be fun. But, like, it's beautiful. It looks like Italy. It's just there's no Italians there, and it's unbelievable. So we're there. We're having a lot of fun. We get up one of these days at 4 a.m. to catch a ferry, catch that ferry to like a peninsula, drive across the peninsula, get onto another ferry at 6 a.m.
That's definitely traveling. Yeah. Getting up at 4 a.m.
And then so like now it's like 7 a.m. and we're on the other side. We're finally back on the mainland.
Yeah.
And we take the back roads up to like a border stop between Croatia and Bosnia.
Because
we wanted to go to one where there weren't a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So like we crossed the border into Bosnia at about like 9:30 in the morning or whatever it is. But this is my point. Like that to me, that's traveling. Like, not every day was like that, but like we got up at 4 o'clock to do this just so we could get to this waterfall in Bosnia. And like everyone's a little nervous. I'm a little nervous. Like I don't really know what to expect. Like I grew up during the Bosnian War and I remember that. And so,
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Well, this is like a big part because Croatia was fighting Bosnia. So we were in one place and we literally just hop across the border to the place that they were fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike World War II, where there was actually one real evil Axis power. And like history will even today still say like, it's pretty clear cut. Like they were the evil empire and the rest of us were the rebellion.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, like literally even Star Wars is based off of that.
Yeah.
The Bosnian War, it's hard to say, man, because there's a bunch of different people fighting for different reasons. And it wasn't a one-on-one war. It was like a one-on-one-on-one-on-one war. There was like three or four different factions fighting. So we go into Bosnia and it was just like, man, it was intense, you know?
Yeah.
So we do the waterfall, which is pretty cool. This was like, so this is what kind of set everything off, right? We're like, we're in Bosnia, we're at this waterfall, everything's going pretty well.
Yeah.
And then this one British tourist, I don't know what happened, but he pissed off one of the locals. So the local dude just starts screaming at him and pushing him around, grabbing him by the throat, right?
Yeah.
And so like, I knew everyone was a little on edge for Bosnia, you know, like, you know, because that was why we were going. It was supposed to be kind of like, let's do something for a day that's
Let's be edgy.
Yeah. And like that happens, so we're like, oh shit, what did we get ourselves into? So then we pull into the town of Mostar, and it's completely bombed out on half the side. Like literally, like entire parking garage is just bombed out. It looks exactly like it did in the 90s, if you saw it on TV, right?
Yeah.
And so everyone's like panicking. I'm a little panicky. Like there's no real like delineation down streets. It's like, is this a pedestrian street? Is it not? Just keep driving. And like, so we get there. We're doing an Airbnb, so now I'm walking up and down the street trying to find this fucking lockbox, right?
That is kind of like such a shock there that you're going through, you're seeing like bombed down things, and then it's just like, oh, and they have Airbnb too.
Yeah, and not only that, there's like a Gucci store. Next to the Gucci store is a building that has not recovered and there's bullet holes all over it, right?
That's crazy.
So you have no idea what to make of this. So I finally call the guy, and I'm like, look, I don't know where I'm at. I think I'm on the street. He's like, okay, you see this door? You push that. The key doesn't work because he thinks somebody tried to break in last night. You know, he's you know, we're all the way upstairs. So me being like, you know, as good of a trip leader as I am, totally don't tell anybody that.
The question is, do they know now?
Yeah, they do. Yeah. And they all said you should have told us. And I was like, you're right. I should have,
but I didn't. It all worked out, right?
And I just panicked. I just didn't want people to be aware of that. Because this was my champion. Bosnia was the thing that I wanted to do the most. So like I kind of swept that under the rug.
I don't know if I even blame you. I might have done the same thing.
So then we go to the top floor and we open up the door to our apartment, which is super nice. The best Airbnb we had the entire time. But the door is literally 2-inch thick steel. Like heavy. Like you literally had to lean into it. It has like those locks like from a bank vault that literally lock down the entire hinge of the door. The entire frame is even thicker, like 4-inch steel.
Yeah.
And you're like, what do we get ourselves into?
What the?
So then like we're chilling for a second. We open up the door. We step outside. And the thing about Mostar, and I'm going to take a second to explain this because this is what it's like to be in a different place. Mostar is half Muslim, half Christian. Yeah. And what I mean by half, I truly mean half. There's a river that goes down the middle of it.
Yeah, you were telling me about
and
this.
On the one side, you look out, and there's churches, and there's a cross on top of like the mountain. On the other side, there's a bunch of mosques, right? Yeah. So we step outside.
Is it a really even a stark contrast when you're there?
Like sure.
You can see it?
Yeah. I mean, like, if you're not aware, then maybe not.
I think you were telling me about this.
Yeah, because like, you know, if you have no clue, first off, if you have no clue, don't go to Bosnia. Like, yeah. Figure out some clues first. Maybe not the place you're just like, oh, I just happened to be in Sarajevo. It's not that bad.
I was just strolling down in a couple roads and I ended up in Bosnia.
Yeah.
And I was calling my Airbnb guy. He said some guy tried to break in, but you know, I'm already here.
So as soon as we open the door, we look out and I guess it's a Muslim prayer, an Islamic prayer goes off like every, like maybe five times a day or whatever.
Yeah, it's five times a day.
So the entire valley, even the Christian side's echoing with this, like loud.
Oh, wow.
And so like, I've seen movies. We've all seen movies that take place in the Middle East or whatnot, but Bosnia is part of Europe. But to see that, to hear it, it sent like chills up my back because I've never experienced anything like that. It was culturally like immersive and you're just like, whoa, like you are no longer in a place that is normal, a place that thinks and acts the same way that you do, because there are tons of Muslim people that live here, tons of Jewish people, and we all live pretty harmoniously.
Yeah.
In Mostar, when I mean it's cut in half, I mean it. Half of the town has its own public transportation, its own school, its own hospital, its own taxi service. The other half has the exact same thing, and they do not cross.
Yeah.
Like, I've heard stories of, like, Christians getting caught on the Muslim side or Muslims getting caught on the Christian side and just not coming back.
I think that's something people forget is that one is that when even you go over there, it's not necessarily the Middle East, but there's still a lot of Islam that goes up into Russia and everything like
that. It's crazy, man. Mm-hmm. The whole Ottoman Empire. So we're there. The town's called Mostar. It was the most bombed place in the Bosnian War, at least in Bosnia.
Yeah.
Right. So the Bosnians bombed Dubrovnik, which is like the Pearl of the Adriatic. And like that pissed off the whole world because it was like a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Mm-hmm. So then in turn, they bombed Mostar and bombed this bridge, this Ottoman bridge from like the 14th century. They've since like rebuilt it by hand.
Yeah.
But like, they're just like, oh yeah, this is an Ottoman structure. And you're like, Ottoman? Wait, I played Civilization 4 and 5. So let me redo some steps. And I hate to admit how like really important that game helps me articulate these things.
Dude, video games they're the best.
So like it's super crazy to me to be like in a place like that. It was really unique. So there's, like I said, most of those houses are still bombed out. The one right next to us had been like patched together, and like it's eye-opening. Unlike World War II, the Bosnian War, it's so hard for an American to wrap their head around, even with the facts, because it's just not such a big evil versus not.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's factions of people who believe certain things and like who's right, who's wrong. And it was crazy because then we started going back and forth between the border. We actually took a road trip through like southern Bosnia, which was wild because I was like, there's landmines everywhere. You can't step off the road. And all of a sudden, Billy Joel's River of Dreams comes on the radio. I'm just like, I'm pumped, bro, because I just seen Billy Joel back in like August, and he's awesome.
How was it?
Oh, dude, come on, man. You know, it's Billy Joel, dog. Anyway, so like Billy Joel's on the radio, and it's one of those things where you're like, I have no idea really where I'm at. Like, we're in Bosnia. They're hanging Croatian flags, and technically we're actually in Herzegovina, and technically we're actually in another state in the Bosnia world called, like, I actually don't know how to pronounce it because there's no actual like syllables in it. But like, so like, are you in Bosnia? Are you in Herzegovina? Why are you flying Croatian flags? And they're like, they want to be part of Croatia. And I'm like, I just want to get out of this place, man.
Yeah.
So then we decide to take another smaller road so we can avoid like where all the, because I've heard people get stuck at the border for like 4 hours.
Jeez.
Next thing you know, this road turns into a single lane dirt road. And we are in the middle of buttfuck nowhere Bosnia.
Fuck all of that.
And like, so here I am, the fearless leader. I'm like, yeah, it's no problem. No problem.
Yeah.
And even like the group was like hanging on. They were like, well, we trust you. And I'm like, you fucking trust me. I'm so
scared.
That's
how you gotta be, though.
Luckily, so we're on this road for like 10 minutes and I'm just like, just keep going, I guess. We'll see what happens. And then like a Mercedes passes us. And I was like, oh, okay. Maybe.
That reminds me of the Get Smart movie where he's driving the Ferrari.
record.
They just find it in the garage with the Steve Carell. They just like find in the middle of Russia. Like there's all these old ass cars from the communist era.
Right, right.
And they just find like a Ferrari in a garage and they're just driving it through like St. Petersburg.
Yeah, because like you never know. Like you just think like you're in this like awful spot and
or
really
might have been Moscow. I don't want to get that wrong, but keep going.
Yeah, I mean, it's Get Smart. Nobody saw it. You could say it took place in Istanbul. I don't think anyone would argue with you.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't. The only reason I remember is because we watched it recently.
Such a lame movie. I'm assuming because I've never seen it.
Yeah. It was. I mean, it's okay. It's a good family movie.
Yeah. So we ended up in Montenegro too. That was cool. Just to say that I did it.
Yeah.
And we came back home. I was home for like 2 weeks.
Yeah. What was that like? Because I want to know what that was like because you just traveled again and you were in Bosnia. And from what you're describing, it's this really culture shock type thing. And you're learning a lot from that. And then you know you're coming back here, which is like the pinnacle of the world, basically.
Sure.
For 2 weeks. And then you're going right back over. And you know that when you're going right back over, you're going in. You're going to Auschwitz, and that's like one of the things you want to go and see when you're there.
Well, so it's so funny because it's like total first world problems, but I think when you travel, you need time to decompress and let the experience soak in. What I felt in Bosnia, what I felt in Croatia, and to an extent Montenegro. Even Helsinki on a layover. So like it was a lot of traveling. I didn't give it its due time to sink in because then it was like literally boots on the ground, try to get back to some level of normalcy just to like peel off again.
Yeah.
And then so we went to Poland, Czech Republic, and Germany. But this time we brought my daughter, who's three.
Yeah, okay.
And she was awesome. Total rock star. Mm-hmm. But like it was weird. Like I almost didn't want to go. When we first got back for the first week, I was exhausted. I was like, I can't do this again. And right around the second week, and we knew we were leaving, it was actually like, okay, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And then once again, like, so we went to Poland first. And Krakow is one of the coolest places I've ever been. Totally. Someone asked me, like, what was my favorite thing or what caught you by surprise? And Krakow for sure.
I've heard it's actually really fun.
Dude, it's an amazing town. Even with a three-year-old, like it's just, it's walkable. It's beautiful. Such history, like from old to like recent, like it's a really important part of World War II and like the concentration camp. So
was it different traveling with your daughter?
Oh,
like
God.
What was that like compared? Cause you usually travel with just like, you went with Tom and your fiance and that was before he was married, right?
Yeah, but so we went before he was married, and then they got married, and then we went to Croatia.
But I'm guessing most of the times you've traveled, you haven't traveled with your daughter, right?
No,
this the first time?
Especially on a plane, yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely, how do I say this? You have responsibilities at home, and when you travel, generally you leave those responsibilities, or at least put them on hold.
Yeah.
Traveling with a child is just making your responsibilities mobile.
Okay, you know? Yeah, I see.
Just take what it takes to keep your kid entertained and like safe and fed and all that stuff and mobilize it.
Go to Bosnia.
Yeah, and bring it with you. In retrospect, I would have taken her to Bosnia knowing what I know now, and what we experienced was a lot of it was self-inflicted.
Yeah.
Because it really wasn't that big of a deal. Like we were nervous at that waterfall because we were the first people there, and this entire bus full of like babushkas showed up, like grandmothers from somewhere in a Slavic. I'm not even kidding you. Like literally a bus full of 80-year-old ladies in bonnets and stuff. So I'm like, it's not that bad because like they're fine here. And then like, you know, a busload of Chinese tourists show up, and you're like, okay, it's not that scary. But traveling with my daughter was awesome. In a way, like she actually was really good in all the things that you didn't think she'd be good at. Like flying, she had no problem.
Yeah.
Trains, no problem. Cars, no trouble. It's just once we got there and I'm like, look, it's Elsa's castle, because everything's Elsa's castle.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
She's like, dad, I don't care. Where's the playground? I'm like, see, we didn't fly all the way to Europe
to go to the playground.
We
have a playground. down the street.
Yeah, and it looks a lot like a square with cobblestone streets, but you know, you might be able to climb on something. We went to a lot of playgrounds. We actually found some cool ones in some cool
one
spots.
One thing I want to say, though, is that when I went over to Europe and I was younger, the playgrounds are way cooler than over here. So I don't blame your daughter.
They had some cool stuff, and she did really well. One of the things, not to just come off like everything was easy, she had to eat at a restaurant basically every meal. And that was awful because she was like, I don't want to be here. Like, you take her to a restaurant once every couple of weeks or months in town, it's doable.
Yeah.
But every single meal, especially in Europe, where they're like, hey, do you want your bill? Too bad. You get to wait an hour and a half. And it's like, no, I'm done eating. Like, my kid's going to destroy this place. Just bring us the bill. Look
this
at her.
My kid is literally going to make this place explode.
Seriously, she started like pulling all the pillows off of this like table and like spinning my mom's boyfriend in his like swivel chair. And just like, it was just like, just please, just bring us the check. I just want to leave. Yeah. You know, traveling in Europe with a kid's funny because you get to see like the differences in people.
Yeah.
One of the things over there that bothers me to no end, and it's cultural, and to me personally as an adult, I just accept it, but it's the smoking, like the constant smoking.
There's a lot of places.
But like I said, if I'm in a public place and I'm smoking, even if I bring my daughter there and I'm in a big square, I'm aware that's going to happen. That's on me.
Yeah.
But if like we have to walk past you just on a street and you literally flick your cigarette ash without even paying attention because you're on your phone and you're basically flicking it into my daughter's stroller.
Yeah.
Like that's where I got a big problem. And that's where I started getting like, hey, excuse me, like you just ashed your cigarette
right
on my daughter. Like, I don't know if you know this about me, but I'll kill you.
Literally.
You know?
There's like, nothing you could do about it.
I've never wanted to fight anybody in my life except for the people in Europe who were ashing on my daughter. And I was like, I'll kill you all.
That's,
I promise you.
Even in like the most modern ones, because Poland has a crazy history where I remember taking European history, like AP and European history in high school. And there's like this point in time where it just disappears because everybody was taking it over. And then all of a sudden there's like a new updated map and it's just like there again. You're like, wait, this is what? It just came back? Like,
dude,
how?
They've been getting crushed for 500 years.
I know. It's rough for them.
It is, man. Then, like, so
when but even in Germany, like even in Munich, there's still a lot of smoking. And that's like one of the most modern European countries.
Yeah. When we were in Croatia, I actually wasn't with my daughter, but we were in Croatia and we're at a restaurant and the lady next to us is smoking. And I'm just like frustrated, but it's no problem.
Yeah.
Then I hear and she's speaking English, you know, like American. Like clearly she's even from the East Coast, I can tell. And like she's at a restaurant where we don't do this in the U.S. at all. And she's literally smoking right next to me and then ashes her cigarette and it lands on my shoe. Now, ash is actually a clean substance, right? Like, it's pretty much purified. It's just been burned. No. So it's not so much the fact that there's ash on my feet. It doesn't matter. I literally go camping and I'm covered
in it. It's
still
gross
as
fuck.
It's just the fact. It's gross as a human being to just even think that, like.
Well, because to them, it's their trash.
No, no,
you know
no. Like,
I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly. And you're an American. It's not as if you're coming from somewhere in, like, you know, like Latvia, where maybe or maybe not that's a thing. I don't know. But I looked at her and I was like, excuse me, can you please not ash your cigarette on me? She's like, oh, I'm sorry. And like moved it to her other hand. I wanted to be like, you're an American, right? So like, you know, like back at home, we don't do this.
Yeah.
So like, why come here and just make a total pig of yourself?
Yeah.
Like I'm, as a human being, as disgusted as I can be looking at you ashing your cigarette on me. It's not even that I think people who smoke are gross because I don't really care. Like do what you want. But to just be that type of person where you're so like completely disconnected that like, A, you don't realize that your cigarette actually is like smoking less than 2 feet from my face. But then you have the audacity just to be completely clueless and ash it. And I wanted to be like, what if I literally walked to the other side of you and just lit a big pile of shit on fire? You'd complain, wouldn't you? You'd be like, what the hell? Is all this burning shit next to me? That's like, how I feel about you smoking a cigarette next to me or basically on top of me.
Yeah, but even if you don't find, like, for someone who doesn't find smoking gross, just the fact that they're, because they're smoking and they're throwing away what's left over right on you. You know what I mean?
It's a gross part of your humanity. Like, I don't agree with the act and I do get kind of grossed out by it. Not like, I'm just like, come on, man, you know, have some respect for yourself. But like, to not have respect for yourself But to do that in an isolated spot, that's no problem, man. Mm-hmm. If you're, like I said, standing on a street corner and you're smoking a cigarette and you're just cognizant of where the smoke's going, you're doing your best to, like, blow it into the corner, that's okay. I'm not going to judge you. I don't care, man. It's your thing. You do your thing. Mm-hmm. But if you're just like, oh, I can do this wherever I want and have no, like, cognizance of, like, where it's going and, like, what. I mean, people were blowing their smoke just out on the street, like, literally sitting down on their phones, not looking up, taking a drag, blowing it out, and the smoke just going all over my daughter. Yeah. And I'm like, that's the kind of stuff that's going to get me arrested and end up on Locked Up Abroad, you know? Like, I got real...
Well, I had fun traveling for my whole life, but I'm never welcome back.
Yeah. I'm not allowed in their country anymore. Mm. And I shouldn't go too much, but that's one thing that traveling with my daughter that I noticed was... That was tough. That was tough for me because, like, I'm so protective of her in that sense. Like, I don't stop her from climbing. We don't stop her from, like, making mistakes, but I do stop or would like to stop other people around her being just awful human beings. But for the most part, everyone in Europe was really cool. All the people that we had personal connections with, whether it was our drivers or whatnot, were awesome. Talking about, like, Poland just getting leveled. I talked to our driver. We had a guy take us from, like, Berlin to Poland in, like, a one-way, whatever you call it, transfer. And we're just asking, like, you know, what's it like in Krakow now? Like, do you guys have any, like, you know, hate still towards the Germans or towards the Russians or whatnot? And he was like, yeah, you know, like, the thing with Germany is sort of over, but obviously there'll always be long-lasting, like, issues. But, like, the Russians, we're still really mad at them. Because, like, what they've done is, like, more recently, like, the communism and all that stuff. And it was just crazy to hear, like, to hear from, like, on the ground what they were saying. And not just, like, what your perception of them is. Like, we make fun of, like, you know, Polish people in the U.S. It's, like, one of those silly, like, jokes from the 80s. My fiance is Polish, at least in prior heritage, and that's why we went. But to actually go and sit down and talk and find out, like, what it's like there, what it's been like there, like, maybe, like, where it's going was... crazy because Poland's this, like, this country that's on the up and up, you know, now part of the EU, like, it's exploding. And then just hearing, like, where they are as a country might have been where the US was however many years ago, but to see, like, okay, well, we don't want to lose our currency because everything's going to be more expensive here if we take the euro, but if we take the euro, we become stronger with the union and more money starts to flow. And, like, it's crazy, man. Like, you know, in the US, we do a lot to separate industry in residential areas. So, like, you very rarely from any city will see power plants or anything. Dude, you're in Krakow and you're looking out and you're looking at a castle or you're on a castle that's looking out and the castle's like 500-600 years old. You're looking out over an old town that's just equally as old. You're looking down this street they call the Royal Route where the coronation route for Polish kings would come down, you know? And right behind that is this massive coal plant. This massive coal plant just like chugging out you know, smoke or... or mist or whatever you want to call it. Because I have no idea how fucking coal plants work. But like, it's just there. It's prominent. And like, that's like, you're like, oh shit. Never even would have suspected. Like, they don't even try to hide it. You know, but that's also part of like the communism.
They're still developing. Which is crazy to think too. Which is almost something that like we forget about living here.
That's true, man. And it's cool to see them in different parts like that. Croatia is a lot in the same way where they went through that war and Croatia was a big tourist destination before it and then afterwards it took a huge hit
didn't know it was a tourist destination before
I mean, so maybe not so much for Americans because weren't allowed to go but the rest of Europe really liked it even before that, like in like the 19th century but they're still rebuilding. Because like now a little show called Game of Thrones started filming there and their tours. So this number arbitrarily doesn't sound like that's that big of a deal, but their tourism numbers increased 60%. So imagine Yosemite National Park, it's 5 million people. Now, can you imagine that increasing by 60%? What's that, like 7-8 million people showing up? Like, that's a huge increase. To have just almost overnight because of one TV show. So like Croatia's doing great now, at least that area, like it's getting a lot more money. It's becoming more expensive. Then you go across to Bosnia and it's like, nope, hasn't really developed at all.
Jeez. You know?
This was funny, man, talking about like not being able to go there. When I was talking to the guy from Airbnb and when we were in Mostar in Bosnia, the air conditioner wasn't working. It was super hot there. It's like the desert, basically. And so I wrote the guy. I'm like, hey, your air conditioner isn't working. The ones in the room are working. So, like, we're not really, like, in dire straits here. Just give you a heads up. And he's like, well, I'll send someone out to fix it today. And I was like, you know, I don't think that's a good idea. We had a bad experience with one of the locals already. And since we've been here in Bosnia, everyone's just a little on edge. So, like, maybe we don't need someone just coming in and fixing it. And he's like, it's no problem. He's like, if you want me to come down from Sarajevo, I'm like, it's okay. Like, we'll give you a good review. It's no problem. Just give us some time.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, you American tourists, like, he actually, because we just started talking. I was like, no, that's what he said. He was like, yeah, you know, sorry, some of the locals can still be a little, you know.
Edgy.
Yeah. And I was like, dude, look, I'm from Philly. We throw snowballs at Santa Claus. Like, it's okay. I know the type. And he was like, you know, Americans, like, we love having Americans here. He's like, back in, like, the 90s during all, like, the communist propaganda, like, we hated you guys.
Yeah.
He's like, but now we realize how great you are. Mm-hmm. And in that little sentence was literally a lifetime of growth for a country, as far as, like, no, like, we were communists and the communist propaganda, like, we didn't like you.
Yeah.
We didn't want you. We didn't believe any of you.
That's crazy.
And then somebody dropped a John Wayne movie, and then we watched it and realized, like, Americans are super cool. And he didn't say that. That's how I interpret, like, the West. Just,
it's,
like,
so funny because you think, like, propaganda, and you just, what comes to my mind is from history classes growing up, is, like, Nazi propaganda or communist propaganda. You're like, how could anybody?
Mm-hmm.
But then you, like, you go and you go over there, like you're saying, and you realize, man, they did this to a whole country.
Yeah.
It's not like it's just happening to you.
Yep.
They do it to a whole country, so that's why it works.
And, like, I'm an American by default. That's it. I was just born here.
Yeah.
I have no cultural ties.
Luck of the draw.
Yeah. I'm not even culturally tied to America in that sense, where, like, I would let a nationalist thought dictate my personal feelings.
But
then again, I guess being an American, you never had to worry about that.
It's just really nice having all the opportunities.
Sure. And, like, and you realize that. So, like, this guy is telling me that we didn't like you because you were Americans. And now we do. But, like, that was wild, man. I was like, shit, in this guy's lifetime, he's had to, like, go through that. And, like,
as a person.
What Bosnia has gone through and come through. And you realize, like, man,
it's not like, man, you know, I really didn't like Frosted Flakes when I was younger.
Yeah.
But now, you know, now that I've grown up, I really like them. They're really good. It's that change, but on such a bigger magnitude.
It's
like, I hated this whole set and group of people. But you know what? Now that we're past that, like, that is a really huge change. That's crazy to think.
It's crazy. And, like, and to an extent, a lot of Europe's gone through that. Mm-hmm. At least a lot of the stuff that was behind the Iron Curtain. Like, that was cool. So there's a picture of my dad at Brandenburg Gate in the 80s, and he couldn't go across. He was in the Air Force.
Yeah.
You know, and this was when East Berlin and West Berlin was still a thing.
Oh, that's, I didn't realize he was in the Air Force. So that's where he learned to fly. Yeah.
So, like, literally he couldn't go across.
Yeah.
And this was in my lifetime, I'm assuming, like, if I wasn't born, it would have been really close.
Yeah.
And here I am bringing my 3-year-old daughter and just walking right through it back and forth. Like, you're going east, west, doesn't matter.
Oh, where your dad took the picture.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that weird for you? Was that at all?
No, not weird. I mean, like, my dad was a world traveler through the Air Force and whatnot, and I always thought it was cool.
Yeah, you're pretty young when he, so for anyone who doesn't know, like, he passed away.
Well, I mean, I was 22.
You were 22, yeah.
Yeah, so I wasn't terribly young, and definitely doesn't bother me thinking about, like, you know, being places that he was or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I was there for completely different reasons.
Yeah.
And it was just more to me, it was a sense of how far some culture, or not some, but a culture can come in such a short amount of time, that my dad had gone there and was completely incapable of crossing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was incapable of leaving West Berlin, because West Berlin was actually completely encased in East Germany. And the only way you could get there were through planes, you know? Okay. So, like, he couldn't even leave the city limits. And here I am, literally, like, hopping back and forth, like, taking pieces of the wall home and leaving them to people for souvenirs. And then, like, just hopping in a car and just crossing the border, going to Poland.
Yeah, you know? See how you just, like, you see how you couldn't do this? You just, like, stand on the border, you just go back and forth.
It's so wild, man. Yeah. And I'm glad that I got a long chance to talk about this in some scheduled format, because, like you said, it's so much happened to me in such a short amount of time that, like, I couldn't really articulate it. I really couldn't like put it into perspective of like how emotionally it made me feel. And I'm like working out half of this stuff just talking about it.
Talking about it is like the experience, and then sharing it with people. That's when you really learn like what you went through. I'm glad you came on and you're talking about it, because I'm learning a lot.
Well, and here's the thing too. Like travel can be cheap. I don't want to come off like, oh, I just do whatever I want. Yes, I run my own business. So if I want to take off, I'm going to. That's a big caveat. But don't think for a second that we're out there renting yachts and stuff, because that's not the case. It cost me $860 to get me, Ashley, and my daughter to Berlin and back.
That is great.
$300. Yeah. Wow. $300 tickets. So like we didn't spend that much money doing it.
I'm going to have to ask you how you did that.
Dude, Google Flights, man. I tell you what, get Tom Palmer on here, because he's basically the one that finds all my flights. But we wanted to go to Poland, but flying into Poland was expensive. It was like $800 a person.
Yeah.
And Berlin's right next to Poland. Yeah. You know, so we decided to fly into one that was a little further away. Mm-hmm. In retrospect, like it does take a little bit of doing, because it's only cheaper if your time means nothing, because we lost a day between Berlin and Poland. But
for what you get overall.
Yeah. Like, if it was, you know, a couple hundred dollars difference, fly direct, you know? Yeah. But, and then you stay in Airbnbs, you split the cost.
Yeah.
We've stayed in some crazy nice places for like $200, but then you split that between two different couples, it's $100.
Airbnb is the best.
Yeah. Airbnb, I think so. Best, yeah. So like you can do it. You can travel, you know, like, it's funny. I had a thought. and not half an hour later, I still haven't gotten back to it. Mm-hmm. But you had said we knew going from one to the other, we were going to be going like to Auschwitz or whatnot. Yeah. I actually didn't want to go.
Yeah, I know you were telling me.
I didn't want to go. I had made every plans to stay back with my daughter. Because as much as I'd like to joke that we brought her, we didn't. she stayed in the Airbnb with my mom.
Yeah.
But the day before we decided to go, and we went, and
I'm glad you did.
It was, and it's just going to come off sounding so cliche, and that's fine. Like, it was actually life-changing. Like, every time, like, there's a technique that you can do. I read it through, like, a book on Stoicism, but I think you can find it anywhere. It's like, visualize the worst thing that could happen 5 minutes a day.
Yeah.
So like if you get stressed out, like what's the worst thing that can happen today? Yeah. And you visualize like, oh, my daughter getting sick, or my wife getting sick, or somebody getting hurt, or somebody dying.
And then just kind of put things in this perspective.
And okay, well, it's not that bad. Yeah. So going to Auschwitz was like that, but I think it's an infinite well to draw from. So anytime I'm like, man, I'm really stressed out about like relaunching this business, I got to remind myself like, dude, you got to walk in and then walk out.
Yeah.
Like that shit was palpable. It was like, so we got to do a tour, and I generally don't do tours. I generally prefer just do it at my own pace, which is probably faster than most tours without nearly the information. But with something like that, I think you almost kind of have to.
Yeah.
We had this guy, I think his name was Ziggy, which is awesome. It's not his real name. It's something Slavic that nobody can pronounce. So he did this tour, and it was like, he was just so good. It's just a good storyteller. And we did the two camps. We did Auschwitz and we did Birkenau. And Auschwitz is like a smaller camp. And it's actually more of like an administration's office. A lot of horrendous shit happened there.
Yeah.
But it was small scale. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So then they built Birkenau to be literally like a full functioning mass murder machine. And one of the stats that stuck with me and sticks with me was they killed 450,000 people in 53 days.
Yeah,
it's 53 days. How? I mean, just on a mechanical level, how is that even possible? Mm-hmm. Like, how is that possible? And then they broke it down. It's such a shame
that, like, how efficient they were, and then they had to put that to doing, to killing people.
Yeah. It was unbelievably efficient, like almost beautifully efficient, because everything, when you're there, everything is so isometrical and everything lines up, like you said, like just absolute precision.
Yeah.
And like, it was, man, even just thinking about it, like it was fucked up, bro. It was one of those experiences that like when I left, I wasn't even sad. I think I was just emotionally drained. And you know, you go back and you hug your daughter better than you've ever hugged her before.
I love you.
Yeah. I love everything, man. Yeah. So like I said, like that's what I mean. Like when you come home from something like that and you see people complaining on Facebook or social media about like simple things, I wasn't even mad.
I was driving today.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. And like your first instincts like, oh, I disagree with that. But after something that powerful, I was like, you go ahead. If that's what you believe in, man, good for you. Even though I disagree personally, like, what a treat to come back.
I want to go to Auschwitz and the other ones, because I've been to Dachau. Mm-hmm. So
that's outside of Munich, right?
Mm-hmm. So I went when I was a little bit younger. I think I was, I was in middle school, but I still remember, I still pretty vividly remember it.
Yeah.
I want to go again and see what it's like now that I'm older and I have a better understanding of what happened.
Well, I would recommend just in general, that area, Krakow is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And Auschwitz is like an hour outside. So you can't do one without the other.
Yeah.
It's one of the coolest places you can go. It's one of the coolest places I've been.
Yeah.
And not only that, like the Czech Republic's right there and it's like all fairy tale towns. It's super beautiful. Prague's right there and it's also super beautiful. But
people should do these things, is going and seeing like the camps is how, like you said, you didn't want to go, how terrible it is and everything. I think people need to go and see it just because you know you're going to be there and it's going to be a powerful moment. And it's not, you're not going there necessarily for, like, how do I put this? But you're going there and you're going to realize, you're like, oh my God.
Like, yeah, well,
that,
not
oh
only
my
that,
God, like, moment, how terrible it's going to be.
It puts into perspective how much that event shapes the life you live today.
Yeah.
There are people that you know at this gym whose families fled from that specific camp, from that specific area, not just in general.
Yeah.
Right? I think some of Ashley's family members had been part of it or whatnot. Like, it has reverberations throughout every part of your life. And not only that, man, like, not just like the concentration camps and the Holocaust, but World War II in general. Like, everybody knows about World War II. Matter of fact, like, if I pick a topic or a subject that I'm interested in or that is interesting, I always try to go, like, It's like listening to the B-side of an album that's great. You know, like, I don't really mess with World War II that much because everybody does, you know? But after being there and experiencing it, you're like, oh, man, this is like, I have to know now.
Yeah.
I have to know. I have to put this into perspective
and
how something like this could happen, why it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's crazy to think how close that was to us.
Yeah.
Because you think... There's almost this weird sense that because of how much information, like you said, there's so many things you can just be interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And you were like, man, like World War II, there's so much there. But you see, you feel like there's all this history and it was so long ago because we have access to all the history in the world.
Yep.
But then that's really not that far. That's only like a stone's throw away in history time.
Yeah. And talking about how meticulous the Germans were, that's how they were with their files and stuff
like that.
They were
with everything.
So that's how we have so much information because they actually like documented it all, you know?
Yeah. They documented every single one.
So I'm reading a book or listening to a book, because God forbid I read anything, called The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. I got home and I was like, I got to know. Yeah. I got to know. And like at 35 years old, I've probably done more educating of myself. I've been 34, maybe the last like year and a half. I really decided to like just start educating myself again.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, this is so, I'm telling you, dude, like I spent a long time just being satisfied with what I had.
Yeah.
And I'm still satisfied. So don't take it as like I'm not. But like, I don't know what happened. Like all of a sudden I was just like, I can learn.
Yeah.
I think like when you do learn as a kid, you have to learn a bunch of stuff you don't care about.
Yeah.
So like learning itself becomes like a negative connotation. You're just like, oh, I don't want to learn algebra. It's like, neither do I. Like I still don't. I won't go out of my way to learn algebra. But world history got grouped into all that stuff when I was in school.
Yeah.
So like it's okay. It's whatever. I'll do it.
Like this by association type thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly what it is. So now at 35, I'm like, no, I'm actually really interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think because you can also, I can tangibly put myself in those situations now because I've been there, I've seen it. Like you can understand like, even like with like Croatia that happened in my lifetime, that was really impactful for me was the fact that I remember this happening as a kid. So now I'm in a place that as, oh God, it happened in like 95, so like, 20, like 23 years ago.
So it was like, was it on the news and stuff?
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
I was 12. I was almost a teenager.
Oh, wow.
Right. So like, it wasn't if I was just born. Like I actually remember this being on the news for a very long period of time. I was in Europe when Milosevic, the guy who committed the Serbian genocide in Bosnia, was murdered in his cell in The Hague. Geez. And I was literally going to Amsterdam, which is right next to The Hague.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a little side story. I always love telling the story. Nobody ever cares. But to me, it was really impactful. So I'm 22. I don't really understand much about the Serbian war and the Bosnian war as I do now, because I hadn't gone. But we're heading up. I'm on this train. And actually, it's just me. I'd left my buddy Rob, meeting my brother Glenn. And I'm playing this little cheesy guitar I bought in Barcelona. And this American's like, hey, you know, is that your guitar? And I was like, oh, I'll put it away. I'm sorry. He's like, no, it sounds good. He's like, it's better than listening to a bunch of languages I don't understand. So, like, obviously, you're American. So we start talking. And he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm heading to Amsterdam to meet my buddy. He's like, oh, nice. And I'm like, it's not bad. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm going to The Hague. I got to finish up one of my jobs. I was like, The Hague? That's like the world court. Like, that's where countries go to sue other countries and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, that's exactly what it is. I was like, well, what do you do there? He's like, well, I had a case and the case is like closing or it's closed. I just got some like paperwork. And I'm like, you had a case? Like, if you don't mind me asking, like, what's this all about? He's like, well, I'm a war criminal defendant.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. No, so put that in perspective. He is a war criminal defendant. So if this was the Nuremberg trials, he would have been defending the Nazis.
Yeah.
He was one of a team of lawyers who was defending Slobodan Milosevic for his war crimes against the Bosnian people. And I was like, you're what? I was like, I'm 22.
Bruh.
Yeah. I literally worked at a gas station for 6 months to afford this trip. And that's where I'm at in my life. Mm-hmm. And he was super open about it. And I was like, how did you ever even fall into that job?
Yeah. Like, how can you even think about doing it? Like, it's crazy.
I don't think anyone goes in. I think, like, you know, you're a lawyer, you're a defendant. That's like what you do. And then it just like one door led to another.
Yeah.
But I was blown away. So that started my, like, I don't want to call it a love affair because that's not what I mean, but like that started my like attention to the whole thing.
Yeah, piqued your interest.
Yeah, because I was like, wow, I do remember this guy. I remember this happening, but I don't have any context to it. Mm-hmm. So then going to Bosnia, into Croatia to an extent, and being able to put that into perspective even more was just like, oh, dude, it was so palpable. So I keep talking about this. We can change the subject.
No, keep going. I love it.
No, man, it was cool. I'm glad I got to do it. And now I'm addicted to traveling again.
Yeah.
I'm like 100% addicted. We're going to Thailand in February.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And there's a group of 11 of us going.
Oh, that should be so fun.
So it's like the Clampets go to Chiang Mai, you know? It's going to just be like...
Just tear up Thailand.
I do my best as an American to not be an American while I travel abroad. Yeah. And we rented these electric scooters in Prague.
Yeah.
And so the first thing I say to this guy, because he's giving us the whole like safety spiel, I'm like, look, we're not those type of Americans. Like, we're not the guys from the Midwest with the fanny packs and, like, you know, the eating disorders. Like, no, we're just healthy, happy, fun-loving people. We happen to be Americans, but you can trust us.
Yeah.
So we rent the scooters, and I fucking beat the crap out of this thing. I'm jumping it off at everything. So I ended up...
we're not those Americans, but the voice in the back of your head, we are those Americans.
I literally fold the frame in half.
God.
I literally crippled the frame. And if you ever like do any video stuff or audio stuff, I'll literally give you the picture of like, imagine this metal frame that's supposed to be straight is looking like an accordion.
Oh my God.
This thing went from like a Cadillac to a Peugeot in size, right? I totally smashed this thing. So the guy has to bring me another one. So he shows up and I'm just like, maybe we are those Americans. I'm sorry. Maybe we are. Not every day, but I couldn't help it, man.
Not every day, but today.
I just wanted to rip and tear. And, you know, your Czech-built piece of shit scooter couldn't handle it. And then so we go to the place.
You put some American on your scooter.
Yeah, and the lady's checking us out. And I'm like, you know, does this stuff happen often? She's like, it happens. But she's just like, hold on. She calls the guy. And she's like, my colleague wants to know, like, called everyone colleagues, which I thought was funny. She's like, my colleague wants to know, were you trying to jump this? And I was like, no, I was not
no.
trying.
I wasn't trying. It happened. It just happened.
I had to just straight up. I went into like the Rolodex of every time I jumped that thing in the past half an hour. Just every chance I got.
You spent half an hour on it and 25 minutes of it were spent jumping.
Yeah. And like when it did finally break, it didn't break on a jump. I went over like a sewer grate and it just folded. But I'm assuming that was a straw that broke the camel's back, you know? And I was like, well, I'm a big person. She's like, it's rated for 150 kilos. And I was like, I'm not that big.
I'm that big when I'm landing.
Oh, man. I was just testing the rear for stress fractures. And yeah. What do you want from me? I'm trying to help you with your product. I'm a product tester here. Yeah. So like there's times where you just turn into the American. You can't really help it. Mm-hmm. We were in a place in Croatia and we hadn't eaten breakfast. We're on this like island and apparently does not even wake up until 11. And there's no food, like no place would serve us because we either had like wet shoes or like wet pants and they didn't serve food. So we finally sit down at this place. The guy's super nice. He's like, look, the kitchen opens at 11.
Oh my God.
But you can have a coffee now. So we order coffee. He comes back at 11. He's like, look, I got bad news. The kitchen shut down. So we don't have any food. And I literally just like, I must have looked like a Disney bunny, just like big welled eyes. So I was like, please, sir, feed us. So hungry.
The poor little beggar boy.
So exhausted. Yeah. And he ended up making us like homemade sandwiches. He just like, look, I don't know. I'll just make you guys some sandwiches the way I would make it. God. You know,
that was probably the best sandwich you ever had.
It was the best sandwich. I think I ate everybody's sandwich. They got like halfway through. I was so hungry and I just like, I couldn't help it. Like that's when like being an American, like I'm just like, look, I can't help it, dude. I eat like early.
I have to eat. Yeah. I have to eat.
I will literally burn this entire city down if I don't get any food. Please eat or feed me, please. And he did. He was so cool about it. And like, that's when like traveling's like fun, you know, like things like that. It was starting to turn into like a mess. And then like this dude who has like no reason to go out of his way to help us.
Yeah.
Just did. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like that was a cool feeling. And then he realized like a lot of people in Croatia had this cold attitude about them. And I honestly think it's just more of a cultural thing.
Yeah.
Not a personal thing.
I have a couple friends from over there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But this guy was like the friendliest person. You're like the friendliest person and like just wanted to help. And like, you're like, okay, there's cultural, but then there's personality.
Yeah.
You know, and they just, you know.
There's some things that like no matter where you go, like people are kind of like that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just like some sort of instinctual thing of like just hosting people, you know?
Not only that, like you wave over there, people, they don't wave back. Yeah. They're like, oh.
But they'll make you a sandwich.
Yeah, but they will make it. Yes, they will.
Oh man, that's such an interesting thing. So funny. Well, like, hey, how you doing? No, you want a sandwich though?
I won't say hi, but I will feed you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh man, are you so? What are you going to be doing when you're over in Thailand? Do you have any idea? Or
just destroying that place? I'm sure. There's 11 of us. And like,
you gonna take any Muay Thai classes?
No, God, no. We'll see some Muay Thai fights.
Yeah.
On paper,
that seems like it'd be really fun.
Yeah.
You
sure,
gonna gamble? Man.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. No, are you going to gamble though?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't gamble. I lose money.
Yeah.
You know, like if I go into it thinking I'm going to lose money and I'm just paying for entertainment,
yeah,
then it's fine.
Yeah.
I've never won at gambling. I never will win at gambling. Yeah. So I just pay to have fun.
Yeah. I'm not like a gambler. I'm old enough to gamble, but I've never really done anything like that. But I feel like if you go over there and you're like part of the experience, like, because that's their whole thing is like they're taking bets and they're taking odds and they're exchanging money.
I'm really looking forward to the experience. Yeah. There's 11 of us.
Who are you going with? Is it people from the gym?
Yeah. So Tom and Jess are coming again.
Okay.
Yeah, Ash, awesome. Obviously. My buddy Hugh from San Diego, who I trained jiu-jitsu with. Or no, I played music with, who happened to train jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. Another black belt from another gym, good friend of ours, Chris, is coming.
Okay.
Our friends Tony and Jason, who've never traveled abroad.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Ashley's friend Christine, and then I think Tom's friend Tom. So it's a good
group. You can get them a couple Thai massages for their first time abroad.
We got we got Thai massages in Bali.
Oh, right? You did?
So we asked, we're like, can we get some Thai massages here at the house? And five people show up, right? And they're just like, okay, we'll just go to your rooms. And we're like, rooms? I mean, you guys didn't bring tables? I'm like, oh, you can just lay on your bed. I'm like, okay. So me and Ashley go and lay on our bed. and like these ladies just start crawling all over the bed and just start massaging us. Like, it was the weirdest experience. Like, so weird. Like, I've never had a massage I didn't like. And then, like, that was Tom's first one, right? And I think it's so weird, dude. Like, well, I don't know why it was weird. Just the fact that they were crawling all over our shit.
I think it was
you know?
The fact that you're like in your bedroom, yeah, and it's like, that's like your kind of spot.
And this lady's like massaging my fiance's chest with like absolutely no aversion to it, you know? And I'm just like, care. I don't know what to make of it. She's looking at me. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. So we get out, and like, the Tom had never had a massage, and that was his first one. So afterwards, I was like, "What'd you think?" He's like, "I don't think I liked it." I was like, "Dude,
I don't know. That is really not like
a normal massage." I was like, "Go back to the States, pay more, but like, it'll be a little less like weird, you know?" Yeah. Just like having people crawl over my own bed. But I was just like, I don't know. This is weird. And like, not only that, like, they had no place for your neck to hang. So it was just like super uncomfortable. So
yeah.
Like, it's like, it was
the
almost,
tables are clutch. Like, dude, having that little hole for where you can stick your head and
nothing like that. So I might, you know, forego the whole massage experience. But, I think
just surprise your friends. I think we show up in their room one day while they're sleeping. They wake up and get massaged.
Surprise massage.
Oh my god!
It's probably illegal.
but if nobody knows, right?
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to be doing. Like, we haven't planned it a lot, to be honest, yeah, because I did just plan those last two trips. I'm just like, let the group do what they want.
Yeah,
probably end up turning into a lot of like drinking.
Okay,
but that's what this group in particular. They like to have fun.
Yeah, so. Drink with your friends is fun. Yeah.
Yep, just try not to get arrested.
Try your best. You might just have to stick in the room.
I've seen enough locked up abroad. Yeah. One of the guys who's coming, Jason, he's like, dude, I do not want to end up in jail. I was like, you won't. Just don't do whatever you wouldn't do here.
Yeah.
Have you been in jail here? No? Then you probably won't go to jail there. Yeah. It's fine.
I want to go there eventually someday and see like kind of tropical jungle they have, mm-hmm, kind of going on. It's I think that's what it's like, right?
It's all tropical.
Yeah,
almost from like the top to the bottom. Thailand's huge too. We're doing like days will be different, but we'll go to the north and then down south to the beaches and stuff. So we'll do like the cultural stop in like Chiang Mai and do like the temples and stuff. Mm-hmm. We might make a trip over to Cambodia to see Angkor Wat, and then down to the beaches. And it's a pretty well-oiled, well-traveled route. It's not like we're like, here's the thing, right? Like when we travel, I always like to pick the place that like not a lot of people go to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like when I was in a band and we had to make a set list, we would always pick the band that you wanted to listen to, but maybe the song next to the one that you wanted to hear.
Yeah.
You know, so when we played the Beatles, we played She Came In Through the Bathroom Window because it's technically a B-side. No Beatles song's really a B-side. That's not fair. But it wasn't like Come Together. You know what I mean? So when it comes to like picking places like Indonesia, Bali maybe not so much, but we'll stick with Indonesia.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a little off the radar of most Americans. Croatia definitely is.
Yeah, yeah.
Bosnia,
sure.
Montenegro. People were like, where's Croatia? And I was like, that was the best part. Because I had to literally explain to people where in the world it was before even why we were going.
Mm-hmm.
And Poland was another place that a lot of people don't go. So I'm always like proud of that. But Thailand is so directly on the nose. Yeah. It is so on the nose. Like everybody wants to go there. Everyone needs to go there. Part of me is like, I think we sold out, dude. We could have gone somewhere. Like
sometimes you got to sell out.
Yeah. Yeah. But then like we started looking at the experiences and I'm like, all right, okay, let's sell out. It's fine.
Yeah.
And some of these people, it's their first time like leaving the country or like doing anything like that.
Yeah.
So like
it might be best for them that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, 8 months ago I went to Bali and felt that way.
Yeah.
So literally not even a year goes by and I'm just like, man, you got to chill, man. You got to chill. It's no problem. It's no thing. Like, well, how are we going to get around? Man, we'll get around.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. Trust me. We'll figure it out.
What you have to do is trust me.
Yeah.
And I know you don't.
I know you don't.
I know you were at my 35th birthday party and I wouldn't trust me either. But but trust me on this. I've literally gotten across this world. I to an extent, took a victory lap this year. Because I hadn't flown in so long, you know, like that's what it was for me. So like now, man, especially with like the way you travel now, it used to be like you have to book your hotels well in advance. You have to call to book them. Now it's like you just go on TripAdvisor, Airbnb. people don't realize this. When we travel, most of our travel arrangements goes through Airbnb, through the host, because they're there. They know all the best ways to get around. They know how to, especially like in Southeast Asia. So with Bali, everything I did as far as hiring a driver or transportation was done through the Airbnb host.
Yeah.
So like, if you don't know that and you're trying to like go through all these different avenues, like, trust me.
I
matter
got
of
this.
Fact, I should just run a travel agency because I'd be better at it.
You just don't have to tell anybody about any time that people almost broke in.
I'm sorry, guys. I should have told you. In retrospect, I made a grievous error by withholding information that was probably so valuable funny. To the entire team. But I made an executive decision at the moment that an executive
Sometimes
decision needed
need
to be made.
An executive decision. I have some insider information, but this needs to happen.
We're already here. We can't turn around. Yeah. It'd be a logistical nightmare to pull the plug at that point.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And, like, I knew... Oh, God, I'm sorry, guys. You were right. Should have told everybody in the group. I told Ashley that night, and she was like, what? And I'm like, not a big deal.
I would have loved to see that conversation if it had gone down, where you're just like... So, I just got this email.
Yeah, I think what had happened was I told Ashley in confidence, and I think she accidentally let it slip just through happenstance or whatnot. Yeah. She's like, well, what about when
the guy almost broke in?
Yeah, or something like that. And then Tom and Jess were like, wait, what? And I'm like, well.
You see, I didn't actually tell them either.
And Tom was like, dude, you should have told me. And I was like, I know. I actually can't. I can't say you're wrong.
You see, I couldn't tell you.
See,
I tried.
I wanted to have fun, so I put myself first instead of the group's mentality. Yeah. And I actually had a lot of fun. So, in retrospect,
no one got hurt. No one got hurt.
I hope anyone who's going to travel with me in the future doesn't listen to that part of the podcast.
I'm just going to, that is going to be when you get your travel agency, I'm going to put this as like your bit, like as a review. I'm just going to transcribe it and put it in the review. I was traveling with Jason in Bosnia, but you know, we might've gotten robbed or something because we went into a place where there was almost previously robbed and you just didn't tell us.
I'm a black belt. It's fine. I can stop bullets. It's no problem.
Mm-hmm. I'm a black belt. Trust me. That is one of the most black belt things I've ever heard.
It's not the truth. Oh my God. Like I said, like I don't think the other people who went with us realized what the door looked like just at first.
Yeah.
You know, like you're dropping your bags and this, that, and the other. And I'm looking at this thing like
you just opened it real quick. And
yeah,
like,
well, I mean, like, you know, when you open a door that's really heavy, you're like it like demasculates you. You're just like,
oh yeah, because you try and open it like your normal door pull.
I'm like, nah, man. Like, ooh. Fuck this door. I'm way stronger than that.
Yeah.
Now I'm just like, it's got to be the door's fault.
Yeah.
Some the hinges or something. I'm way stronger than that. And I look, bro. And it's like 2 inches of steel. I'm like, yeah, see.
Yeah.
That's all that was.
They make heavy ass doors over here. What do you want from me?
And I was just like, God, I hope nobody sees this.
You're like, you're getting ready. You do a normal Atos door pull. You're like, all right, here we go. I'm getting ready to go to the gym. This is what I've done 100 times in my life. And then you go to pull that door. Wait, it's not moving.
Nothing.
We heavy ass doors over here, bro. What do you want from me?
Instantly, that door is just like, you're not a man.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah.
Make you feel like a baby today. I know you wrestle dudes all the time and destroy them, but not this door.
Not that door. Maybe
it was a black
sleep.
Belt of doors.
That door wasn't playing. Dude.
You've been playing with white belts your whole life.
Yeah, yeah. Some white belt doors. That door played for keeps, man.
Oh my God.
Even like the screen door, not the screen door, but like the balcony door had like two or three different ways you had to open it before it totally opened.
Oh my God.
And I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Why do I got to pull it out, forward, down? But I'm like, oh. Because it's like, you know, pretty unsafe here.
Yeah.
And Tom told me afterwards, he's like, yeah, he's like, you know, there's actually more guns per people in Bosnia than any other country in the world.
Yeah, you were telling me about this.
And I was like, oh,
that's crazy.
Didn't know that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe I should have done more research. I think I think you can overdo it and scare yourself.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah.
We were looking at Istanbul not too long ago, just, dude, once I start travel, I actually have like a map. I mean, I even said this in the last podcast. I have a map of the world on my wall.
Yeah.
And I just like stare at it, man. Always looking for new places. And Istanbul is like such an important historical point of the world. It's like where the West really meets the East, or the Ottomans meet like the Christians and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was Googling, like, is it safe to go there? And they're like, well, there was a terrorist attack at the airport in 2016.
Okay.
And you're like, damn, that's fucked up, man. Like, and then you start doing research, and like it does, like you get kind of scared. You start getting nervous.
Yeah.
And you realize like you could have died at a Chris Stapleton concert in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like it's easy to omit those facts or to look past those, because it's not that like mass shootings are routine for an American, but like you don't consider it really that big of a deal. Or I shouldn't say that. It's not how I, or like that it's
as a possibility.
Yeah. Right. Like you don't think about that. And
you always think like, yeah, the percentage is this, but that'll never happen.
To me, sure.
You know what I mean?
But when you start looking at other countries, you're like, oh, there was one terrorist attack there in 2016. Like, is it really unsafe? And like some of like the warnings for like the U.S., it's like a level 2 or 3 or whatever.
Okay.
And you're like, man, like that makes me nervous. But what you don't realize is their countries now are posting the same warnings about ours to their countrymen.
Oh, wow.
Like in Germany, you go there, and there's a travel advisory for going to the U.S. that like, you may get shot. You may end up in like, you know, a club or a bar, and there's like shootings and stuff. Like,
that's scary to think.
Well, it exists. Like, you know, it exists, but you don't realize how other countries perceive that.
Yeah.
So what you think is a potential threat in another country, like a terrorist attack in Istanbul, is probably still even less likely than coming across something here in the US.
Mm-hmm.
When we came, and I don't know what happened, but when we came back from Croatia, we landed in New York, and half of the, I think it's the Benzaneros Bridge, I could be wrong, one of the bridges that goes out to like JFK, half of it was closed down. And there was like 50 police cars, SWAT teams, even like federal agents on the top up there. And once again, I didn't know what happened. But could you imagine like coming home or coming to the US and that being the first thing that you see? And then you have this sense of like insecurity for the rest of your trip because you're like, oh, that shit does happen. But like as an American, we're like, oh, fucking traffic. I don't give a fuck what's happening on that bridge. I just want to get home.
Yeah.
I've been traveling forever. Mm-hmm. So like it's all the eye of the beholder. Like the things that you research or whatnot, sometimes you can go too far down the rabbit hole and really work yourself up over nothing.
Yeah.
Like I'll use Bosnia again. Like I was a little nervous going there.
Mm-hmm.
Tom was a little nervous from some of the research that he looked at. And then in retrospect, being there and coming back, I experienced nothing that would have given me any cause.
If you had just gone there.
Yeah.
With you know, you wouldn't have never thought that even to begin with.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But you can work yourself up. You know what I mean? Like there's like King Cobras in Bali. I remember being like, bro, there's cobras there. It's like, yeah, but I mean, let's be honest. Like, there's no cobras in the city. You're fine.
Yeah.
And like,
people aren't just going to let cobras run about and bite people.
So, like, that's just my point. Like, your perception of things, it's very easy to become like conditioned to them. And then all you have to do is just step out of that box once and realize that most of that was self inflicted and most of that was like self imposed. And you're governing yourself for whatever reason, because you're afraid of the unknown. And this goes with everything, not just traveling, but like traveling for me is a conduit to a lot of other aspects in my life. Same with like jujitsu. Like you don't want to do something or you're nervous to do something. And then you do it and you realize like, wow, that wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Like I don't like to compete and I hadn't competed in years. And last year,
is there a reason why you didn't like competing?
Yeah, no, I mean,
it's more just like you enjoy doing jiu-jitsu.
No, like, yeah, well, way. So like, I was dealing with a lot of like leftover, I don't know, for lack of a better word, PTSD from like the accident that I was in.
Yeah.
So it made me uncomfortable. Like I would just like, I wouldn't have like flashbacks on that, but I would get worked up and I wouldn't have a way to like work myself back down.
Was that still the accident like, with...
Yeah. You want to talk about it?
Yeah. Let's talk about it.
All right.
Let's talk about it.
Because it's pretty much as important as it gets for me. It's probably the most
influential.
Yeah. And like it has a lot to do with why I've traveled as much as I've done this year.
Yeah.
So when I was 22 in 2006, I had just gotten back from backpacking Europe. Mm-hmm. Right. So I had all this like worldly experience that I just gained, and I was like pumped to come back to the US and as like a young adult, just take what I had learned and go running with it. And in that short amount of time that I was gone, my dad actually bought his first plane. You know, my dad was a pilot, obviously. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was Easter Sunday. I'd only been home for a couple of days. I used to love flying with him. Like, I've been flying my entire life. I could probably, if zombies attacked, get us up and get us down. Yeah. You know,
you might lose a wheel. But.
Yeah. Might not be happy about it, but like, I'm pretty familiar with it. So long story short, it's Easter Sunday. He's like, hey, you want to go up real quick? So we get in the plane, we go up, the propeller separates. So we're about like 1500, 2000 feet in the air.
Was the propeller on the front?
Yeah. It's a single engine.
Okay.
Four seater plane, but realistically, like the two seats in the back are just meant for your luggage. You know? Yeah. So the propeller separates, the engine cowling blows up. And now we're like, I don't know how you'd say it for the air, but you're essentially dead in the water.
Yeah.
We lose all of our ability to lift and we create a lot of drag. So without the ability, even if we didn't lose our ability to drag, we probably could have floated to a safer landing spot. But because the engine opened up and now we lost our ability to create any amount of lift, and now
there's all this drag, which is creating all this turbulence.
And it just pulled us down. So we ended up crashing into a forest. And
holy shit.
Yeah, dude, I tell you what, man, I don't talk about it that much, not because like it upsets me, like it's a long time's passed, but I try not to prophesize it in a way to like make a monetary gain on it. So when I opened this gym, I was like, I'm not gonna run off of this, even though I feel like it's a really palpable story. But like, man, like,
you don't want it to just define everything, like what you do. And
exactly. But there was about 30 seconds of free fall, and I'll tell you what, it was the longest 30 seconds. Well, not even that. I shouldn't say this. People have asked me, like, well, did your whole life flash before your eyes? And the answer for me was no, because I didn't think I was going to die, I guess. Like, your body just doesn't
absorb
it doesn't allow you to, because survival instincts. Mm-hmm. The only thing I was thinking was what I was going to do when the plane landed. Right. There was no like, my whole life flashed before my eyes. It was just like me.
Oh, geez. Like, let's. Yeah.
This is what we're going to have to do. Like, this is the steps. But like those 30 seconds of loss of control. It's like when you're in a car accident, mostly it's a second or two.
Yeah.
In a plane, it was about 30 seconds. We weren't even that high. You know, 2000 feet's pretty high. But as far as a plane can go, I mean, that's just your first climb. Right.
Yeah.
But that was a long way down. And then when we crashed, my dad died right on impact. The yoke crushed his chest cavity. Now, I'm 6'4", and this is the only time in my life being tall has saved my ass, because my seat was so far back. So like So the yoke or your control stick didn't come forward. So the control stick moves your rudders and your ailerons or any of that stuff that I'm not terribly familiar with. But like, if you push down on one of those, it will move the stick. So it's not like a steering wheel. Like it's all connected mechanically. So it came forward. And actually a lot of pilots who are in accidents die like that.
Yeah.
I, for whatever reason, was almost completely uninjured. It knocked my shoes off, but I had to like kick the door open because the door was jammed shut. Right.
Yeah.
And I looked at my dad. I said, hey, let's go. And you could just, and this was like, this is how you know, like, you're an animal, because I had no emotional attachment to the moment, because I knew he was dead and I knew that he was dead and I was alive and that I had to.
Did that hit you right away?
No. I mean, emotionally, no. It was a calculated, cold survival instinct. You're dead and you're not coming with me. Any amount of energy or time wasted in this moment, I might be dead too.
Yeah.
And like, I just knew right away. In retrospect, like, it did make me a little like apprehensive, like, how could I make such a decision? But I didn't make a decision.
Yeah, you just acted. You just acted.
Complete, like, survival instincts, everything kicked in. Like, I have time to be sad about this later, but right now this is that.
But you have to survive.
And I actually had to, as morbid as this sounds, since we're getting into it, I had to actually prop myself up against him to kick the door open. And you see like that scar on my foot right there, that's from it's from the door. I kick the door open, I get out, and I actually burn my hands after I leave the plane. So I, sitting 2 feet away from somebody, was completely uninjured. He was dead on impact.
Wow.
Like, super crazy. And I get out of the plane, I call 911. Like, I'm still cognizant enough to do this. And some guy comes out from like the neighborhood that we were close to. And he was
where
just
was
like,
this?
This was in Avondale, Pennsylvania. Tough kind of man. You can actually Google it. You know, it's still out there.
Okay.
Matter of fact, if you used to Google my name, that's what came up. Now, luckily, the jiu-jitsu has taken that over. But that fucked me up.
Yeah, I bet.
You know?
Wow.
Like, two things happened. I have this incredible story of how I lost my dad, but I also have this like survival story of how I survived myself, and the two hardly mix.
Yeah.
So on like on one hand, I'm very upset that I lost my dad.
Yeah.
I think my brother and my mother were much more impacted by that. On the other side, I had this personal battle to deal with about being in the accident. So like I kind of like, yeah, I don't know, like they both never really melded.
Yeah.
They almost like one had to be dealt with and the other had to be dealt with, and I couldn't deal with them at the same time. And first off, I had to like recover, I had to get healthy.
Yeah.
But that was and why I had such an aversion to flying.
Yeah. No, I can see it for sure.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't think anyone would judge me. So the people that know me don't even question why I took 3 vacations this year. You know? Some people are like, oh, why'd you do that? And it's like, because I can.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I can do that.
You did it once and then you kind of got over that.
Yeah. So this is why jiu-jitsu has always been such an important part of my life. Because because I had done jiu-jitsu before, but afterwards I lost my dad and I lost any motivation and drive. And then Mike Fitchett, who was an old teammate of mine, opened up a gym. And he was a father of somebody my age. And I kind of attached myself to him because I needed a father figure. He was a lot different than my dad.
Yeah.
And, but he was a well-to-do person, had 2 really successful businesses. If anyone out here likes chiropractic work, Fitchett Chiropractor, hit him up. But he was very, very instrumental in me coming back to jiu-jitsu because I needed to have that like father figure in my life.
Yeah.
And through jiu-jitsu, I had to put myself in a lot of situations that make me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, and I competed a few times even after the accident and, I did okay. But it just,
I guess like, I can see that because jiu-jitsu, when you're, especially when you, like, I don't think of you this way now, like so I'm speaking as a student right now, because when I roll with you, I can see where it for you, it's just, you have all these tools and you have everything.
Yep.
But it's hard of me to think that at one point you were like me.
Oh man. And you're just down there. And like, Mike was a big guy too.
And it's all surviving. Yep. Like it. So there's times where I'm rolling and I'm just like, I have to survive. Like I just have to, so I can totally see I now understand that distinction that you're making. Yeah. That's
so
crazy, man.
And it was super important for me to get back to competing because I hadn't done it in such a long time. Mm-hmm. And
that was fairly recent too.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened. So I competed and I realized, wow, everything I built up about that was completely brought up. Come in. Don't worry, my students are coming as we're filming at the gym here. Yeah. So everything I built up about competing was like made me super nervous, but I did it and I was like, oh, that was nothing. That was not a big deal at all.
Yeah.
You know, I lost my first match and then I went out and won the next tournament a week later.
Yeah.
And then right after that, so I have this like,
how did that feel after all of that? And
it was awesome.
Yeah.
First off, the match that I lost, I went out on my shield with my jiu-jitsu with techniques that I created.
Yeah.
And even though I wasn't successful, like I pushed the world champion pretty close, you know, and that was palpable. So
let's
now I was real excited. And then I won the next tournament the next week, and I had never won a tournament and never won a match at like black belt. So like it was all super awesome. And then within a few weeks, Tom was like, hey, why don't we go to Bali?
Yeah.
And I was like, I think I can do this.
Oh yeah. All this is all making a lot of sense. Wow.
I think I can do this. And so we bought
all these
tickets.
Pieces coming together.
And so when we bought tickets to Bali, my mom was like, why wouldn't you just fly to Florida your first time? And I was like, Mom, if I'm going to do it,
I have to
lock myself in the situation to like, no matter what happens, I have to deal with it.
Yeah.
And then when that plane took off,
this is so much more powerful now that all of this is coming together, all these travels.
Yeah. Wow. And that's, and so, like I said, like that
was
my victory.
You're making me feel things.
Good, man. Well, I hope so. Maybe we should have opened with this part because it would have made all the rambling about my traveling more sensible. But
no, I like that for me because it's, I'll just describe this real quick and let you continue. Sorry to cut you off. Yeah. But for me, it's like all these pieces have now come and tied together. So I'm glad it happened this
way. Look, man, I'm just a person. I'm just one person, man.
Just one person.
So like we did Bali. And so like, and once again, this all comes back to jiu-jitsu because if I didn't come back and started training with Mike Fitchett,
yeah.
I think I would have been lost.
Yeah.
Right. Through jiu-jitsu, I had a sense of like self. I met Ashley, who at the time was definitely a step above where I was. And yeah. like, I really didn't deserve her at all. Mm-hmm. And I was like, look, I do this. I do jiu-jitsu. It's hard. I'm worth yeah. it, you know? Mm-hmm. And through jiu-jitsu, I met Andre. I built the team and I met Tom. Mm-hmm. And then, believe it or not, even though he didn't compete, I made a deal with Tom. I was like, well, if you compete, I'll compete, because he hadn't competed in a while. Yeah. He missed registration. I didn't. So I went out there anyway.
Yeah.
But then he convinced me to fly. And if it wasn't for jiu-jitsu, I wouldn't have met somebody that had like, Tom's young. He's 25. Yeah. You know?
He's a monster.
Yeah. And not only that, he was just like, you want to go? I'm like, oh, I'm a little afraid of flying. He's like, so?
Yeah.
Like he just had no bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like, okay, I'll go.
Yeah.
And we went, and it was like, it was so amazing. And I was so confident.
Good for you.
And here's the funny thing is I got overconfident, because when we flew to Croatia, I was like, shit, 8-hour flight.
Yeah.
I was terrified. I ended up like, dude, I ended up dropping a lot of cuss words. Like,
yeah.
I have to take medicine to fly. I have to take Ativan. Yeah. So here I am operating with less of a filter, but it yeah. didn't do anything to like stave my emotion. Yeah. So I was like, just fucking, I dropped the C word a bunch.
Yeah.
Right.
Did you get like anxiety?
Yeah, or, dude, yeah. I lost my headphones. I like dropped my medicine everywhere. I hardly remember the trip,
but
I do remember Ashley being like, you cussed a lot. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I just don't. So like, I was overconfident, you know, yeah. going into it. And then even with like the trips with my daughter, it was tough, man.
Yeah.
There was one leaving Berlin where a front had just come through the day before, so it was just a lot of wind, a lot of choppy yeah. air.
That's always scary,
dude. Too, we yeah. took off. I was just like, this was so bad. Yeah. And like I said, like I did not conquer my fear.
Yeah.
But I manage it.
Well, you faced it.
Yeah, I yeah. mitigate it just enough. Yeah. I hate flying. It's awful.
Yeah.
But traveling is so
worth it.
Worth it.
Yeah.
If you can change your perspective on your own life, on your own self, if you can change perspective for the people around you, which is yeah. a lot harder to do. Mm-hmm. Most people don't give a shit about your travels.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them. Like, if somebody's like, how was it? I try to think of the worst thing that happened first.
Yeah.
So that way you get hooked in.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, what was it like, you know, in Croatia? I was like, oh man, one day we got stuck in the rain. It was awful. We were standing on the street corner. We
yeah,
got
I can
soaked.
See that. Yeah. Try and make it a little bit.
But the next day we rented dune buggies and it was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Son of a bitch. Yeah. I don't care about the good stuff.
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I felt like this year I got to close that chapter. That book is written. It's yeah. over. The stuff that happened to me from when I was in my mid-20s or early 20s, like the yeah. first time I went to Europe, the accident, losing yeah. my dad, having to grow as a person through all of that. And then now I've done this, as I call it, like that victory lap where I just traveled as much as I could.
Yeah.
It's over. I honestly feel at this point,
you did it.
The book's closing.
Yeah.
And this is why at this moment, I'm rebranding my business.
Yeah, I was about to ask you that. Is this why?
So it's all correlated, right?
Yeah, I was about to ask that.
I'm Atos Westchester. I yep. do not own the name Atos Westchester.
Yeah.
So we're still going to be Atos. I'm not leaving the team. We're still yeah. definitely bleeding blue over here.
Yeah.
But I'm going to change it to a name that's mine. Something that that I can connect with emotionally, that I can connect with
really
other
identify
people.
With.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because you're a black belt now, and it's
yeah,
it's. And yes, you still learn from Andre when he comes out and he does the seminar, which is always super powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But you're the one who's spending all this time with us
yep.
and you grow with the gym, and now your jiu-jitsu is growing.
Yep.
So it makes sense that at this point in your life, after all this, that...
And so now with this newfound feeling of like what it means to be me and what's important to me, I think I can brand this. You hate to talk like this, because it always comes off as like disingenuous or cliche, like I'm branding my business to be about me
yeah.
and my personality.
Mm.
But I'm selling you a t-shirt. So am I yeah. really? But I sell you my thoughts here. The biggest yeah. asset, what people pay for, is in my mind. So
for the people that think it's disingenuous, though, I mean, that's not really what you're... Those aren't the people that you're really going to focus on.
That's
anyway,
true. But I just, to. but I understand it is what I'm saying. Like
yeah,
I
yeah.
understand
that feeling.
And I feel that way when like yeah. a big company does it too,
yeah.
you know? I've seen it happen a bunch, but I want to do my best to at least nip it in the bud and say, like, yeah, I'm still a business. We're still in business to make money. I'm still selling you a product, but I want you to understand that this is an extension of me, and this rebranding is, I hope, going to be able to put that into perspective.
Yeah.
So, we're going to change it to Rhythm Jiu-Jitsu.
Rhythm.
Right. All right. And Rhythm's,
I fucks with it.
Yeah. It's, thanks. Not many people have not disliked it. And the thing is, it's a strong word. It's a simple word. Yeah. Most importantly,
you can always change it too.
Yeah. But it's a universal word.
Yeah.
Rhythm has nothing to do. I shouldn't say nothing. Rhythm doesn't have only to do with just music.
Yeah.
Rhythm's everything, man.
Oh, there's a beautiful rhythm that comes from rolling and jiu-jitsu technique.
Think about this. Like,
I felt it last night when we were rolling. I just felt this rhythm. Like, it kind of made sense.
Well, your heartbeat's a rhythm.
Yeah.
Your breathing pattern's a rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
The sun and the moon rising, falling, seasons. Mm-hmm. It's all rhythm. Yeah. All life is rhythm, right? Yeah. Everything you do from the first thing that indicates your existence on this planet is your heartbeat.
Yeah.
That's a rhythm. The way your cells divide in the beginning is a rhythm. And I'm probably reaching a little bit, getting a little too existential, but that's the point. Like, it does include everything.
No, it's powerful.
With jiu-jitsu, like we were talking about, you coming in to get your blue belt is going to require a rhythm to your schedule that's going to be something that you can adjust and flow to. And look, and here's the thing too.
Even on this, even podcasting. There's a rhythm that you hit in the conversation.
Always,
just flows.
Always. And you have to do your refreshers on Monday and Friday.
Yeah.
You have to hit them. You have to work that time in.
Yeah.
There's a rhythm to it. Progression is the rhythm of effort.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, you don't have to be the best. You don't have to be anything. You just got to be consistent.
Yeah.
And not just in jiu-jitsu, but in life and those decisions. So now that I feel like a lot of the inconsistencies of being a young adult and having to deal with these things on my plate are over, now I can really create what I want. Something more like tangible and organic in here. And just like, look, we're still going to be the same gym. Still going to be the same attitude. I'm just reinvesting back into myself.
Yeah.
You know, and reinvesting into you guys, into the family and all that good stuff, man. I'm super pumped. Like, I had an amazing year. I'm going to have another amazing year, and I'm going to keep having amazing years until
every year. Is my fucking year.
Yeah. Dude, I used to say that like when I was a kid, like one of these years is going to be like the year. It's like, no, it's every year is. Make it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I took 3 vacations this year, and I know some of my students were probably a little miffed, if that'd be the right word, as to why. Now, if my students know me personally, nobody questioned that.
Yeah.
So, like, I had to make some caveats.
If they don't, you can just forward them to the podcast.
Yeah. But I had to make some caveats. You know, I had to say, like, I'm taking 2 vacations in a month, and I'm relying on people that train here to float this thing while I'm gone. Yeah. And I felt a little guilty about it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm so much more of a person than I was before I left. Yeah.
But like you're saying, there's this rhythm where you hit those points in your life where things have to happen that way. You just hit that rhythm where you needed to do that traveling, you know?
And I'm not going to stop either. Yeah. We're doing Thailand this year in 2019. I think we're planning on going to like Switzerland with my mom and daughter again.
Yeah.
2020.
We're going to go to Munich.
I've been to Munich.
Yeah.
I've been to München,
München,
Oh, man. That town.
Das ist ein schönes Stadt.
The only thing I've done in that town is just drink beer. Lots of it. That's a good town.
I love it there.
We're going to Georgia in 2020, and I don't mean the state, but I mean the country.
Yeah,
it's like a guy's trip. Dude, you should come.
2020?
2020.
I'm down.
You got 2 years, September. I think it's September. Bunch of dudes.
Slot me in.
I'm telling you, we are a lot of fun.
No, I don't doubt that. I hope I can be as much fun to add to the trip.
Of course you would. You'll be all nervous. You're like, oh, I don't know. I've never been to this place.
And no, I'll go,
like,
dude. I'll go. With you guys, I'll just go.
And then we'll do a podcast.
Yeah. We can do a podcast there.
Yeah.
We can do a podcast there.
We can do a podcast on the way. And he'd be like, Christ, he's not making any sense. I'm going to be like, I drank too much wine.
The podcast is going to be big enough at that point. I'm going to have you in studio. We're going to do it before. We're going to do there, and we're going to do an after.
It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, Make the time.
Yeah.
Make the time and the rhythm.
For sure.
Travel absolutely. As much as you can. Like, you just went to Aspen. How was that?
It was incredible.
Yeah.
It was incredible. It was a lot of fun. I went with my family. It was, man.
Is it your first time in the Rockies?
That was my first time there. It was going to Denver is when I saw that and noticed it. Because we flew into Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And the airport's like an hour out of Denver, actually.
Right.
It's kind of a weird spot.
It's not even really on the mountains. It's just outside.
Yeah. And which I was like, I was joking around with Sophia, Andre, and who are my brother and sister. And then my parents, I was like, they have all this fucking space out here. They couldn't put the airport right next to the city.
Yeah.
Or they couldn't build a straight road right there. Because you look and it's so flat.
Denver was full of shit.
Yeah. you look out, it's so flat, but it's crazy. And then you start going towards Denver and then all of a sudden it's just like, boom.
Dude.
It's crazy.
It's one of my most favorite places on this earth, the Rocky Mountains. Like, mm-hmm. You talk about spiritual. I don't know if I've been to Aspen. I've been through the area a bunch. Yeah. The first time I ever went was when I was 19. I went with my dad and my mom. And my dad was already there. Then we flew in. The same thing. Like, you just see the Rocky Mountains from the distance.
Yeah.
And then you land and you can't really see them because you're at the airport. And then you start creeping up on them. And you're just like, holy shit, man.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's good for the soul.
Yeah, it really is. It was really... I know this sounds weird. It was kind of cleansing, kind of go there. Like, I felt like I kind of just took a moment and kind of relaxed a little bit. And I don't know.
Well, the biggest thing nobody talks about when they travel is the smell is different. And the Rocky Mountains are very timber.
Yeah.
A lot of like pine forest smells, you know, and it's like, it's different, man, because it's not just like, oh, I got a whiff of like some sort of food. No, like the whole area smells like that. Like, when you travel, like, Europe smells a lot like piss. It's the old cities. Like, they just got a lot of, like, good
old sewage systems.
But, like, it's palpable, man. Because from the second you wake up, you, like, taste it. You know, like, it's just, like, it's in your sense. Like, your smell's, like, inside of your brain. And I think, like, when you get to go somewhere different, that's the first thing you recognize. And I know, like, the Rocky Mountains, it's very... It's like a Western smell. It's like creosote and pine trees. And
It's really what I noticed with going to Aspen, because it takes like 3 hours to drive there from Denver, is when we landed, I was curious to see, because everyone talks about the air. Like, it just feels so clean there. When we landed in Denver, I was like, what are these people smoking?
It smells like Purina dog food here.
Yeah. And then when we got to Aspen, though, I was like, man, it is clean out here.
It's like, what, 8,000-9,000 feet?
Yeah, it's a couple thousand feet above Denver. So it's really up there. And then it's just in the mountains. It looks like you're in a valley, like out here, but then you kind of realize you're like, oh wait, I'm already so many thousands of feet up.
Right.
That's how big these fucking mountains are.
And it's, dude, that's the kind of stuff that makes you question everything.
Yeah.
You know, like when people talk about like religion and whatnot, I'm like, man, I go out to places like that and I'm just like, I don't have to ever wonder. So this was the thing about Croatia, is I didn't realize how beautiful it was, just like geographically speaking. My fault for not really being prepared.
No,
when we got there, and I like, so like the U.S. national parks are, I talk about traveling the world a lot.
Yeah.
When I wasn't flying, I drove across this country 14 times.
No, geez.
I have driven from coast to coast.
You moved out there and then you traveled.
And I love it. The national park system in the U.S. is one of the jewels of the world.
Oh, it's the best.
We talk about like American culture. That is our gift to the world. Take it, run with it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's almost weird because like living here, you don't necessarily think about it unless like for you, you've gone to all
because you're on the East Coast and like you got Shenandoah, which is okay.
Yeah.
Like actually it's not that bad, but compared to like West, Yosemite, it's
beautiful.
So when we were in Croatia, I'm just like looking around and like, I'm like, oh my God, like this place could be a national park. Like it really could. Like huge mountains butt up right up against this like crystal blue water. And like it was like UNESCO World Heritage Sites mixed with some of the best geographical features I've seen. And like, I tell you what, man, that's the kind of stuff that just gets me. It really does. Like, I think the U.S. is one of the most beautiful countries in the world, geographically speaking, because it is so diverse.
Yeah.
I was talking to one of the guys from, is either the guy from Poland or the guy from the Czech Republic.
And yeah.
One of the questions I asked him a lot, because we're in their country, I'm like, hey, have you ever been to the U.S.? And if you haven't, like, where would you go? What would you want to do? Besides New York's a big one.
Yeah.
one of our guys was like, he's like, I don't know the name. I don't know how to pronounce it, but here, let me Google. And he just pulls up a picture of Utah, you know? And I think it was like Monument Valley, even though that's technically Arizona, but that area.
Yeah.
He's like, I have to see something like this. And yeah. I was like, dude, you're right, because that shit is awesome.
Yeah.
Because when you're in Aspen, you're not terribly far. You're kind of at the start of the Colorado Plateau up there. And that's, I think, where the Colorado River even gets its start. Mm. But as you start heading west and you kind of come down into the plateau, and it's just all oranges and greens and purples and yellows, like colors that you'll never see. And it's nowhere like that in the world. No geographical feature can mimic that, because what happened in the United States to make that happen is a very unique ecological event.
Yeah.
So like, you're not going to go to a lot of places and find that. That's the US. That's only a part of it. Then you have like the California coast, the Sierra Nevadas, the Cascades, the Rockies, like Montana. Dude, the Rockies go from Montana all the way to Texas.
Yeah.
I've been in the most southern part of Texas in the Rocky Mountains, and it looks like Glacier National Park, just the Mexican version.
Yeah.
Like I can't even, man, God, please, if anyone listening to this, just go travel.
Yeah.
Just take this, put it in your car, and go.
Yeah.
You have to.
Don't question it, just go.
Yeah, this is like, I don't think we talked about anything except for traveling this entire time.
Yeah, I'm glad. Yeah, I learned a lot. Yeah, for sure. Oh, man. All right. How you feeling?
I'm good.
Yeah.
Ready to beat these dudes up.
Yeah, let's go. But any of you want to close out with anything?
Oh, no, man. I can't wait to come back and do it again.
You are welcome anytime, like I said. Anytime.
What we'll do one of these times, we got to get a couple of us, maybe like me, you, Jim, and Paul.
Yeah.
We'll get in the car, and we'll just drive.
Yeah.
And we'll drive somewhere, like Lancaster or the Poconos or the beach or something.
I'd rather go to the Poconos.
Yeah, and then just do like a podcast and just
we can do that.
It'll just
sure.
be chaos.
Yeah,
like that's a good group, because you have four totally different sensibilities that all have one communal connection.
They're such an interesting group.
Let's do it. Let's make that the next one.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
Speaking of the devil,
I know he's walking in now.
There he is.
All right,
hold on, I'll let Jim have the final word.
Yeah, you want to close it out first, Jim?
I'll try and keep it clean. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Lucas Hyde Podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, my God. Jim, you're going to be on. You're going to be on at one point. Thank you, everybody. I love you so much. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you, Professor. Oh, well, love you guys. Ready? Yeah, you got it.
Do it. Do it, see you, Mom.
Bye, everyone.